Totally from the Transpo Group, and Morgan Shook from Burke Consulting. Now, remember, because we have had some of these questions before, Larry is our transportation consultant. Morgan looks at the fiscal summary. So Morgan and Larry do not replicate what each other does. They have kind of two separate sides of the discussion. So what we're wanted to talk to you about today, and I don't know whether or not Greg wants to really initiate it or whether I should do the introduction. He provides color. What we're really talking about at this point is moving on from the discussion that we had a couple of weeks ago, where we talked in general terms about, do we want to have one citywide traffic impact fee, or do we want to have two separate impact fees? It sounded like council was interested in exploring more on the two impact fee strategies, two districts. One of them would be within the planned action area, and the other one would be outside of the planned action area. This would potentially allow the city to place a greater share of the costs within the planned action area and a lesser share outside of that area. We also talked about the general concept of why we're even having this discussion at all. We find ourselves, if we have the moderate growth scenario that the council has approved, we find ourselves with not only up to 1 million square feet or more of retail office, but we also have projects that together would, at the high end of things, amount to about $39 million, a little bit in addition to $39 million in total transportation improvement costs. There, it's important to understand exactly what that $39 million consists of. First, it would not be a $39 million cost right away. The $39 million would be made up of a number of different projects, both within the planned action area and outside of the planned action area, all of which caused by growth within the planned action area. Of that $39 million, about $25 million of it, just a little bit north of 25, is on city roads, city projects that the city has control over. In other words, projects that the city is really ultimately responsible for. About $14 million, 25 plus 14 equals 39, about $14 million is Washington State Department of Transportation, WSDOT projects that they are ultimately responsible for in terms of approving. The question becomes, though, as you know, WSDOT has indicated they do not expect to be able to fund any portion of that $14 million. Therefore, if WSDOT does not fund any, the city would, in theory, be on the hook for up to $39 million. Now, as you may know, as we've seen in the past, pre-2008, WSDOT has never or almost never not been a partner, a financial partner. They are indicating that those days might be over with. We don't know. We don't know precisely what the future funding from WSDOT is going to be. And that's something that council is going to need to be mindful of when you look at the total costs that the city might be responsible for. If the city's only responsible for about $25 million, and if all of the development came in, it's likely that the city would be seeing a net budget surplus, not in the $1 or $2 million range, but possibly up to $15 million or so. If WSDOT did not come to the table, and if the costs were as high on the high end of things, the city could be looking at this coming out as a wash, more or less, or possibly even at a deficit if there was no partnering and if the absolute worst-case scenario came to be true. One quick thing. What we talked about a little bit a couple weeks ago was the maximum impact fee that you could charge. There is a maximum that you can charge. There is no minimum. You can, in fact, not charge an impact fee and be perfectly fine, but there is a maximum based on the trips coming in and out, who generates them, and who impacts what. As you can see in what I've handed out to you, and I can also display it on the screen if you wish, we came up to a maximum of about $4,300 within the planned action area. If we went with a two-part strategy, the maximum would be about $2,800 outside of the planned action area. If we went with a one-part strategy, you'd be looking at about $3,500 for everybody. In this chart, we break down the different types of land uses, general concepts, general types, to see what they would be paying. Not going to go into these in detail, although you might find that some of them are relatively surprising. For instance, if you look at the trips that a fast food store would generate per 1,000 square feet, it generates 34 vehicle trips during the p.m. peak hour. Compared to the specter of a freestanding discount store, which generates only 5 trips per 1,000 square feet. That is a significant difference in terms of the intensity of the trips going in and out. Now, obviously, a fast food store is usually only about 1,200 square feet or so, whereas a freestanding discount store is about 120,000 square feet. So it does even out, but as far as the intensity of the uses, this is a very interesting thing to look at. Also, you might want to note grocery stores are twice as intense as a freestanding discount store.
Just wanted to add here, too, in relationship to funding all or a portion of the $39 million in regards to what you already mentioned as far as what is purely the city's responsibility and what could conceivably be shared responsibility with the state. The dilemma is one of the aspects that a lot of the developers on Main Street and all other places, they're going to want to know, first of all, you know, what the fee is, and we're going to be deciding that in the next few weeks or what have you. They want to know what the level of service is, and then we've already gotten there. The last component that is probably the hardest to convey with any sense of certainty is, when will the city do the improvements? Because if you're a developer and you come in and you pay your impact fees, and if you're large enough to pay a significant impact fee, I think there is an embedded belief that the city will actually do the traffic improvements that are on the list. So in relationship to the I-5 interchange, when we're talking about those two roundabouts on either side of I-5 and Main, as Yuri mentioned, that's in the state has the ability to say yes or no. Hopefully they would contribute, but they're telling us that they don't have any money. So do we decide to collect 60-70% of the monies for the roundabouts and then tell the state we've got 60 or 70%, kick up the rest, and they say no, then we go, oh, crap. Because, you know, we would have 60 or 70% of the money to do a project, and if the state said no, we would be the ones that would potentially be enduring the issue with having the traffic and no traffic solution. So it's kind of a dilemma. Do you indeed collect the full amount that you can to provide the $39 million with the realization that if the state does not come through, at least we will have the cash to do the project? And I'm assuming that if they do come through, we could then use those monies that were collected for some other transportation improvements that's on our plan. So no one has a crystal ball. No one can say for certainty in the next 20 years how much money, if any, the state might have. It's one thing to say it's realistic to assume they'll kick in something, but we don't know what that something is, and then we have to be faced with the idea or the specter of if they don't kick in the money or if they're very slow in coming up with the money, are we willing to endure the degraded level of service until the state is willing to come up with a balance, or do we just kind of take it in our own endeavors and move forward with the assumption that if we do get money from the state, that'll be just kind of an icing on the cake, and it'll allow us to divert some of that revenue to another project. But that's something I'm hopeful that both Larry from Transpo can kind of give us his feeling as to what historically has happened in other communities. And, of course, Morgan's here to talk about the cash flow when it comes to the timing of the projects, because on our concurrency, we're now talking about 6 years from the impact, within 6 years. So that gives you a window. But naturally, I think everyone, both the city as well as developers, would like the improvement on the shorter end of the 6 years rather than in the sixth year of having to deal with a degraded level of service.
Kessler and Goodrich?
This may have been covered last time, but I wasn't here, so I want to ask a question. In the planned action area, last year we raised the impact fee from, was it $300 or $500 per trip to $2,300 per trip. And now we're talking about raising it another $1,300 a trip. At the time we raised it to the 23, a question was asked, well, would Ferndale Station be able to have been built at the higher rate? And the answer was probably not, because they couldn't afford it. So if we're, are we getting ourselves into a situation like we are with, that comes up, it seems like every time in the Economic Development Commission meetings, of downtown, where we have all these beautiful things and standards and all this stuff, but nothing's getting built. You know, so are we going to, we got possibly $39 million worth of projects, but are we going to shoot ourselves in the foot by raising these fees to a higher level and say, oh, yeah, we got all these plans, we got all this impact fee money scheduled, but nobody comes knocking on our door anymore and nothing gets built. And because we've raised all these fees. And, you know, this is a big, big jump in fees in a year for that area.
I think that is, you know, the real basis of why we're here, because there's a $39 million price tag that ultimately someone's going to need to pay for it, or a lot of different someones are going to have to pay for it. And so the age-old discussion of if we have to – raise $39 million, what's the best way to do it? Is it by keeping it low and hoping that sales tax, for instance, is going to be able to fund all of it, making it high and risking it that people won't come because it is too high, but also the impacts wouldn't? And that's where Larry has identified the projects. Morgan is going to help us to identify the.
So you're on a really basic question that, you know, we've talked about before, is you're going to make some of the toughest decisions a council's ever made before. And so we have a limited amount of time. We have both Morgan and Larry here, and Morgan hasn't been here. So what I do is I kind of hold – that's a big philosophical question that you're all going, yeah, I want to answer that. Well, so to allow us to get that answer, I think we should move and let Morgan do his part. Because you're going to need a little more information to kind of make that question, but very good statement. Thank you for making it. Yeah. So is that a good enough intro for you?
Or do we put you on the spot?
Yeah, put me on the spot here, but I think...
In fact, you're just special attention, too. Not only were we talking about this now between 5 and 6, but it's on the regular agenda, too. Mm-hmm. So if there's some holdover thoughts and questions you didn't get to now, we'll be able to address it later on.
I have a quick side question, too, that may fall under this. If we collect these fees, don't we have to use them in a certain period of time?
10 years. Yeah, we have 10 years.
10 years? I thought it was...
No, what used to be. Now, recent legislation moved it to 10 years.
Oh, okay.
And we've never had a problem suspending the transportation impact fees before.
Well, we're dealing with the state and having to do all that. That could be drug out for years.
Yes.
So, Greg and Yuri asked me to come up to make myself available for questions. So if I had to restate your question so I understand it correctly, it's we raise the fee, what does this do to project feasibility? Is that the general question?
Yeah, we've already raised the fee drastically last year, and now we're talking about raising it again.
Yeah, so we kind of tried to broach this back in November. We put together something, I think it's dated on December 8th, actually, where it's kind of a real sort of case-specific kind of question. In my personal opinion, in a slow market, you know, one that's particularly hasn't quite been made yet, you know, like you need to think carefully about burden, but at the same time, you need to be stewards around sort of what the right city policy is and what's the appropriate way to fund it. And there's no sort of easy way out of that conversation. We took a kind of look at it and said, you know, from your financial point of view, what might it be worth to you? You know, saying, like, if you thought about the market over 20 years, given what's planned there, if you were to raise the fee on these different things, how might it decrease what might be possible, assuming all things kind of stay consistent? And so basically we took a look at a scenario. If you raise the fee 74%, you may potentially lower your revenues by about a third over time. I mean, that'd be the trade-off by basically just some of that stuff that's the marginal store, you know, I guess is really the best way to look at it. So if you raise it, the price, that store doesn't get built. So that kind of analysis, just kind of showing you from a financial point of view what's at stake. And so that's kind of was sort of the backdrop of the TBD question, if there was a way to potentially help raise additional revenues, which I know the city just recently passed, so applaud that's a great thing. But any case-by-case thing, it's really hard to tell because it depends on whether it's a what kind of project. They all have different sensitivities to the impact fee. And so I don't really have a good answer for you in terms of overall, but conceptually you're right. You know, there is some marginal rate at which it will, you know, some stores won't get built and some will, but who knows what that looks like.
Follow up, and then I'll go to Lloyd, and I'll go right down the line. I just want to, you were saying like a 70% or 74%.
Yeah, what we look at.
Just to throw a number on that, $2,300 with a 75% increase would be $4,025. So that's really the, so his numbers were saying that if we kick it from $2,300 to about 4,000 or a little bit above 4,000, we might expect, what, a 30% decrease in cash flows over 20 years. Yeah. But that, I mean, it's great.
Also, in looking at the numbers, how does this new little twist that's been added recently with the Lummies buying the property on the south side of Slater and, you know, possible talking of large retail going in there, they could be a lot more attractive because they don't have to charge the impact fees, and we're going to get stuck with the impact because it's our city street and things. So does that factor into this? Because we didn't have that before, and that's a new twist that's been added to the city that we're going to be competing, possibly competing against that.
From a market perspective, yeah. I mean, if it's kind of, you think about it, it's just general merchandise retail. There's only so much of that within the area. So something that's going in is eating into that market piece. But I think figuring out the right way to sort of – is that within the city limits? I can't remember. Is that just
if there's 80 acres, 10 within the city limits, and 70 outside.
Yeah, obviously, if it's within the city limits, you get the leverage to TBD revenues that come out of that. So that's a positive thing. But all depends on sort of
– not necessarily if it's the Lummies developing it. We may not get anything.
I think you can still get the sales tax.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the
we still
get
sales
tax.
On the 10%.
On the 10%.
Maybe. I'm not guaranteed. So, kind of questions for Morgan. I saw just about everybody's hand up, so I'll go down.
Mr. Mayor, I'll take advice. I can hold my questions. Hello.
Okay. John?
First, as a clarification, Yuri, when you painted the scenario in your introduction that if the state does not help out, we would basically be spending all of our benefits, tax benefits, on the projects, basically. Is that assuming the $2,300 current fee, or is that assuming a different fee?
I'll go back. Yeah, so Yuri's right. The $14 million in additional sort of WSDOT related project fees is kind of the backbreaker. It kind of creates a sort of a basically a kind of a fiscal no-brainer in terms of if the development happens and you can manage your cost type of thing, the city is likely to be on the upside of that. If that is part of the equation, you're looking at kind of at best the wash. And so
if we maintain the $2,300.
If the $2,300, yeah, you're up like five. At that point, so basically the way we kind of did the analysis, right? If you start, you had $25 million in capital costs. If you did the $2,300 fee, you got about roughly $9 million in tax increment. Oh, sorry, transportation impact fee dollars that is deducted from that. So then you're just kind of looking at sort of how do we fund an additional $15-16 million worth of projects. You have some money coming from the TBD. The plus side on the operating side, you had roughly $22 million in sort of operating revenues over the time period with roughly $6 million in operating costs. So that leaves you about $15 million up. So depending on sort of how you set the dollars, that's where your increment is. But you're always looking at some place using operating dollars because that's really where the financial upside is off the sales tax and using those dedicated to some of the capital dollars. That was always the situation because you always had a capital funding shortfall.
And so my big question is kind of pointing towards Greg, is last week we saw the community take ownership over our streets and pass the sales tax increase. And sort of an admission that we may not be able to expect any money from the state for these types of things. And so I felt like last week's vote was saying, it's up to us. So why isn't then, shouldn't we approach this thing, you know, it's up to us, it's up to the developers, it's up to the city, and we should just assume it's not there. Just completely assume. And also assume that we can't lay it all upon the citizens either, who've already, you know, are committed this. I see the argument for a much higher, I mean, the highest TIF there, just because of the circumstances. And if the state comes through, we can reevaluate and lower it later. Is that the wrong way to look at that?
No, I mean, I think it depends. You know, like, as Dory said, you're looking at potentially anywhere from $25 to $39 million of cost. Those aren't today's costs. Nobody's asking you to fund $25 million worth of projects. It's all sort of commensurate and given the flexibility you have with concurrency, really when the projects are needed. So in some cases, you're not really even thinking about funding projects until they actually become, you know, real, and they actually have real tax revenues that come against it. And so in that way, you know, if the city wanted to err on more of the conservative side, maybe you don't get the full value of the projects, you know, but maybe you get something smaller in scale just because, you know, if the projects don't come, maybe not all that $25 million worth of projects comes. So you're kind of potentially sort of ratcheting the, you know, if you thought about sort of, you know, Councilmember Goodrich's point of view, maybe we keep the marginal project from happening versus, well, maybe how do we sort of best control our exposure, increasing the rate to a point where you're kind of potentially pricing out of the marginal project actually is a way for doing that, because you still, one, you control the introduction of the actual cost with the revenues, but maybe your bigger the size of the pie over time is just smaller. So instead of that $5 million or $10 million surplus, it's really 2 to 3, but at the same time, you've left yourself in a good sort of risk management position. Does that make sense?
I'm just saying that if we do this, if development comes in, and all we end up with is more traffic and more development, yeah. But does at the end of the day, the sales tax revenue isn't that much, where have we benefited?
Yeah, exactly. No, so I agree. I mean, the fee is one way to actually help mitigate control how much exposure you have over time.
I think another way to think about it, too, is maybe not – it's this whole Goldilocks idea we talked about before, trying to find something that's not too low, not too high. But if you look at the extremes, if we set the impact fees too low, in hindsight, too low, we will have the development, but we won't have the cash flow to do the projects in the time we'd like to do it. Conversely, if we set the impact fees, in hindsight, too high, we won't have development, but I guess you could also say that we won't have the impacts. And so, you know, where do you fall down in between? I do think there's an argument for taking care of yourself. It's one thing to say we hope that the state in the next 20 years can throw something towards a project that we might have 60, 70, 80% financing for. But I guess on the other side, too, is it's also maybe good to say, and if the state doesn't come through, we can still take care of our own. But that's a hard question, but I guess overall, maybe not in 5 years, maybe not in 10 years, maybe not in 20 years, but this city is poised for a growth in commercial development. When you look 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years from now, you know, it's going to come. Will it come when we're still here to take the credit or take the blame? We'll have to see. But I think the idea of Ferndale staying what it is now into the conceivable future and our kids and grandkids is probably not in the cards. But we are now just tasked with looking at the 5, 10, 15, 20-year horizon.
Okay, Councilperson Ingram?
No, I just basically wanted to clarify something. It's been stated that we did this huge traffic impact fee increase, and that's not 100% accurate. What we did was we homogenized our traffic impact fees. We made them uniform throughout the city. Out by rural Slater area where our traffic impact fees were in the low $700 per trip range, they went up dramatically. Up on the hill where they were in the $3,700 range, they came down pretty dramatically. So it's the whole thing was just evening out to make the city uniform. So addressing what Greg just said, understanding that Ferndale probably has the 3, and if you include Smith Road, 4, undeveloped freeway interchanges in the state of Washington. I just drove the length of I-5 from Battleground to here. There's nothing that's not developed, and nothing that's not being built. More. Is going to come, no matter what we do with traffic impact fees, no matter where we set them. We may delay that we set high retail development coming in for 5 years, maybe 10 years, but they're coming because there's no place else for them to go. So I wouldn't be too scared, personally, to fudge a little bit toward the high end. I don't want to go as high as we legally can. I think that would be just telling developers we don't want to go there.
Okay, the other side of the room, I saw some hands up. Councilperson Watson.
I had a quick question on your November 21st report. I'm trying to understand what you mean by change in residual land value. And you were talking about how the different TIFs change the residual land value. And it seemed to vary quite a bit between retail, apartments, and strip and office. And I'm just trying to understand how that works.
Yeah, so residual land value is kind of a basic tool to understand sort of what, given a certain use, mm-hmm. and you factor in the cost of development, the rents, and the operating costs, things like that, how much would the land actually be worth? Tool developers and other folks use just help price the land. So if I can buy the land at $10 a square foot, but I know if I put this development on there, it'd be worth $20 a square foot, that I just realized $10 worth of value. It's just a real basic way they look at it. And so we did this little analysis just to kind of look at sort of some current comps around sort of what a big box, multifamily, kind of strip commercial would look like, understand kind of, you know, just real general performa parameters around construction costs, operating costs, and likely rents you could be achieved given what's currently happening to help do that analysis. And the reason you see the differentials is just mostly have to do with sort of the actual, the marginal revenue that comes out of a project on a square foot basis, because they all different, they're tapping different markets relative to the impact fee. So it's a lot of like a multifamily apartment doesn't generate the same amount of trips as a 150,000 square feet. Big box thing. So that's why you see the differentials between the different product types.
So for the strip office, which seemed to be hit the hardest, is that mostly due because of rents and that sort of
thing? Yeah, there's marginal rents, and basically it's got higher trips, so it bears more cost there. Okay. So they've got kind of less cushion anyway. Okay. I think it's kind of a way to think about it.
But the apartments didn't seem to be hurt as much.
They don't generate as much sort of PPM trips.
Okay.
And we're just using sort of base sort of stuff. Assumptions here. Okay. I mean, it all really depends on a case-by-case basis what happens. We're just trying to make the broad point that when there's no uniformity, like mm-hmm. when you say an impact fee is going to hurt development, well, what kind of development?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any more questions at this time? Nope. Okay.
I have one that I think is more for Larry, though, and that has to do with, especially with the planned Acton area. How does Thornton Road fit in the mix?
Well, Thornton Road is in our baseline, even assumed prior to under the no action alternative. So it's still part of the impact fee program in here. And in the scenario that kind of shows it says to cover the $70 million cost, either the $1,661 or it's split the $920-something and $2,300 or whatever. Thornton Road would be covered under that part of the impact fee. So under each of these scenarios, all developments throughout the city are contributing toward the Thornton Road interchange project. It's just getting to a portion of the Thornton Road interchange project because we didn't assume 100% of the cost in the previous impact fee. It's just under 50%.
You remember we had the freeway?
From the discussions I've heard at this table, over the freeway is out of the question. We're not going to do that.
Right.
Likely we'll never do that. Even after all of us are gone, it still won't happen. But what we're really talking about is connection to Second Street. And if I remember correctly, by lowering the recommended impact fee down from, what was it, 36, down to 23. Yeah. What we took away was the full build-out of Thornton Road.
Correct.
When we kept the engineering costs in.
I think we have like 47% of the entire cost of the project to connect.
The next question I have is, because we haven't set the planned action impact fee yet, we can't say what the percentage. The entire city will contribute to the Thornton Road project.
Correct.
But it will come up short no matter what. Is that a fair statement?
Correct. The framework of these plans of how the impact fee is set up is the projects that were included in the current impact fee, the $2,300, stayed the same, but the costs are spread out over 5,000 more trips, say. So instead of $2,300 per trip, it's $1,660 per trip. Same amount of money would be generated, because you just have that many more trips in here. And so that part doesn't change. And then we're just doing an overlay, if you will, of the additional $39 million of the planned action improvements. And those can be divvied up two ways. You can divide them up the same way citywide, or you can divide them up and say the planned action area gets more, has more impact and therefore more benefit out of those improvements, so they pay a higher rate than development in the other parts of the city. So that's essentially the two scenarios that Greg has put out there before.
Councilperson Goodrich?
This question may be more from Mark. Changing hats quickly here to the Transportation Benefit Board thing. If we, as a, decided to go out to the city again and ask for a property tax increase to do Thornton, would we get enough money from a property tax increase, or could we, to pay for the bond to do Thornton over the railroad tracks? Or
you could just do the math.
I don't know. I don't remember the math.
The answer would be very palatable. But, yeah, we could propose a property tax, 20-year property tax.
Do you have any idea what the number might be, Mark? If we, is it $20 million, is that we're talking now, to come from Thornton down to the portal?
What shortfall we're talking about.
But to be clear, probably wouldn't be appropriate to do it under TBD, because the type of property tax levy you can do under TBD is a one-year excess levy.
We
whereas
don't have to do
a,
so this would have to be a
council, votable bond, people would be completely different. Could be a 20-year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just to use the kind of planning level numbers that Transpo put together when we did our original $2,300 impact fee, doing the over the railroad tracks down to Second Avenue roundabout, that's about $20, $21 million. And we heard that we're funding about half of that through our $2,300 transportation impact fee. So that leaves, if these numbers are...
Yeah, those are that's the right number for that. But the total project's about just under $40 million for the total project. The what's in the impact fee right now is about 18, which
but
cover
that's all
almost
all the way
over. For everything. But the 18 million.
You're going to drive these people nuts if you keep bringing it all the way over, because
they told you.
We're not going all the way over.
What's in the impact fee is about $18 million of the $21 million that he was just talking about to get to Second.
Okay.
So we're almost. The impact fee and the $2,300 impact fee would cover 90% of getting to Second.
And what might end up happening is when we do a little bit more engineering and refine this number for what it costs to go over into the roundabout, we might 2-3 years from now, 5 years from now, look in our bank and say, you know, we've got $5 million, we have $10 million. Do we want to ask the voters for the difference, whatever that difference may be? And that would be a voted 20-year bond. That would have the effect of course, asking the voters, do they want to take money out of their property taxes each year and fund whatever the gap is between any monies we have on hand and whatever the eventual cost of going over to the roundabout might be. If that was to happen, that, of course, I think would be really a great thing from the standpoint of, I think it would buy us capacity on Main Street, because I can just envision that a lot of folks would not go down Main Street to I-5. They go across Thornton to the roundabout and on to I-5 and to work and back. It also would free up some of the future transportation impact fees that would either allow us to use it for projects on the list, or we could conceivably, and we can do this at any time, raise or lower the impact fee. It could be if we get a voted bond issue, we said, well, now that we've got this extra $10 million to make up a number, let's lower the impact fees because our impact fees are built on certain costs. Or it could be that we have so many other costs or projects that have come on board because it's now 5 or 10 years in the future. You may decide, or whoever is here in your chairs at that time, that it's appropriate to keep the impact fee and what it is, and simply be able to fund other projects sooner than you would have.
Councilperson Watson?
I was just curious, are we going to talk about having the two zones at this point? I mean, can I ask a question about the two zones?
Well, we were talking about that.
My hope is at our next meeting, I would really like to bring back an ordinance that would specify one zone, two zone, and specify a fee for in the planned action and out of the. I really hope that by tonight, and if you're comfortable tonight during the study session or during the regular council meeting, if you could give us direction to bring back an ordinance that specifies your preference, that'd be great.
Well, that's part of my question.
Right. If you feel like you need more time, you know, March 5th is not a magic number by any stretch of imagination. So we just want to be sure that you're comfortable.
I guess I'm just wondering, we're talking about just doing, you know, a certain price for the planned action area, but does that mean the Grandview and Slater interchanges would have the lower price? So if you wanted to put a large retail, because those are regional retail, right? You have to be minimum of 100,000 square feet, so you could theoretically put something bigger up at Grandview or Slater and pay a lot less money than dropping it on Main.
No.
That is a good point. Couple things. First of all, the argument has been made. Very good point, but you aren't the first one to make it, that some of the property owners within the planned action area contributed to a $200,000 study, went through a year-long process, and would now be, in effect, penalized by paying more for the impact fees. Whereas folks at Slater or Grandview could, in theory, come in and develop. However, as you know, in our municipal code, we require an environmental impact statement for development over 100,000 square feet, 120,000 square feet, and we require that minimum to walk in the door at regional retail zones at Grandview and Slater. So potential development in those two areas have a year in front of them for an EIS, and may at the back end of it, I need to have identified mitigation measures that may cost an equivalent amount or a proportionate amount of what they would be experiencing on Main Street.
But you don't think that if someone built something large, they wouldn't pay any mitigation environmentally if it was on the other side of Main?
You mean in the planned action area?
In the planned action.
Right.
They don't have to do the report, but that doesn't mean they might not have to pay the mitigation for wetlands.
True. But as far as transportation costs, if we're talking about the transportation impact fee and the differential between the transportation impact fee in the plan action area versus the transportation impact fee at Slater or Grandview, they are less, but those, as you already said, those projects would have to go through an EIS, and that EIS could and probably will mean that whatever number we pick for the non-planned action, they'll have to pay an amount above that, because if in the planned action, we're setting the fee, and that's the fee. So if you come in, let's say we set it at $4,000 or whatever it might be. It's $4,000 today, and assuming you guys don't change it in the future, it's $4,000 5 years from now, it's $4,000 10 years from now, because the EIS has already been done. The impacts have been delineated rather specifically, and the costs estimated and the fee set for that, because we made some assumptions on what is going to be built as far as intensity in the planned action. Down at Slater, that work hasn't been done. We just know that we want everyone outside the planned action to pay a certain percentage of the planned action costs, the $39 million, and a certain percentage of the $70 million. But that doesn't, if a big box store went down at Slater, they might have specific needs for their store because of its size, which would generate a traffic improvement that they solely would be responsible to pay for, which would probably mean that if they had a $3,500 transportation impact fee, there could be an add-on following the conclusion of an environmental impact statement. That's the risk and reward that we're talking about in the planned action. The reward in the planned action is your fee is your fee is your fee. You know what it is, whether you're coming in as a shoe store or you're coming in as a huge big box store. It's so much per vehicle trip, and it's going to be set out in the planned action impact fees. The risk outside of the planned action is that you won't know until you come in and say, I want to build something this big, this tall, with this many trips, as to what your transportation impact fees are going to be, because those specific impacts have not been delineated outside of the planned action. So there's an advantage within the planned action because you get certainty. It might be expensive, but it's certainty. The uncertainty outside of the planned action is it might be expensive.
So if you're going to build 100,000 square foot in the planned action area, or a 500,000 square foot, say you want to put them all,
right?
You're going to pay the same tip, basically.
Yep, per vehicle trip. Okay. It doesn't matter. It'll be set early March or whatever you all decide.
No, I really don't know.
And the other areas, the interchanges would pay for their own EIA.
Other areas, you'll know the minimum. Let's say we set $3,500 outside the planned action. They'll know at the very least they'll pay $3,500 a trip, but you won't know until the end of their EIS for their particular development what that $3,500 might go to. And there's no way to know that because the study just hasn't been done.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Ingram.
So, Councilmember West, I think think what your concern is that we are unintentionally making it more difficult to develop on Main and I-5.
I'd love to make it more difficult to develop on Main.
Sure. That's fine. But I think the plan action.
Fairness issue. I'm trying to think more of a fairness.
Yeah. I think the purpose of the plan action was to do the opposite. It does do that. There's more certainty, as Greg just said. They know what they're in for. They have no idea what they're in for Slater and Grandview, and it could be a lot more beyond the $2,300.
In addition to the money, there's the time. Let's say that a big box store that takes a year to build, if they want to build when we're all done with our work here, if they want to build on Main Street, they can open their doors 1 year from when they put in an application, assuming that it all flows well. If the same store that takes a year to build wants to build down at Slater, they will have a year to do an EIS, and then if everything goes well, they will have a year to build. So they're looking at a 2-year time frame for building versus a 1-year time frame in the planned action area. The whole idea of the planned action is to bring some certainty to fees and to lessen the time it takes from when you put in an application and it's approved to when you start laying up the first bricks and opening your door.
Councilperson Ingram and then Goodrich.
Well, we discussed many moons ago that after 262 planned action was done, if we liked the way it went, we would address doing the same thing at 260 and at 264.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's still a possibility.
And I think that would be, personally, a wise thing to do. If we end up liking what we're doing with 262, why not?
They have a hard time hearing you.
You want to move your microphone a little closer?
If we like what we're doing here, I think it would be just downright prudent of us to take the next step and do the next two, because, as I said, we know they're coming. And it's not a matter of making it easier for them. It's a matter of making them aware that this is what you are going to be looking at to build here. And if we've got these fees at 262, likely 260 is going to be relatively close, maybe even a little more expensive because of the terrible conditions down there. And surely Grandview is going to be a nightmare.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I don't know who would answer this question, but how do the in lieu of the aspect of the big developer comes in and says, well, let's say they take that area across the street from WeQ. So, okay, well, we'll redo Barrett Road, or we'll do this. You know, I think sometimes we get caught up in, wow, look at the dollars that we're going to have as a city to be able to do things. Well, don't the developers have that option to say, hey, you know, we'll do this in lieu of giving you money, or we'll do this over here or something in lieu of.
Absolutely. Right-of-way dedication is another really good example. Another one that Department of Transportation brought up was there's going to be stormwater that needs to be taken care of. There's going to probably be wetland mitigation that needs to be taken care of. Rather than having WashDOT or the city have to purchase property and then do the mitigations, there might be some properties in this planned action area that can't be developed on except for wetland mitigation or stormwater. And wherever the city or WashDOT can get in lieu contributions, it can save the city money where the developer doesn't actually have to pay. And I would think that from the perspective of most developers, they would rather get the improvements in than have to write a check for the city in a lot of cases. Now, what the city wants to do is to be able to have our personnel be the ones that are reviewing it and managing the projects, because then we know for absolute certain the quality of the work, and we have the Katie Ratters of the world and Janice Marlegas of the world who can make sure that we come in on budget as they have.
Yeah, the idea of some companies will come in and say, we just want to write a check and we're done with it. Others will say, we don't like writing checks so much, but we're willing to dedicate or give you this much land for whatever you need or when the mitigation. That's absolutely correct. So that there are some strategies for the property owners and the developers to lessen their transportation impact fees if they happen to be in a situation where they have something, land, i.e. land or mitigation areas that we could use.
How do you decide how much you're going to let them do? Is that something that Mr. Burnett would decide?
Yeah, something that I think it would really be a function of public works. Let's say we're talking about storm drainage, that we need an area for storm drainage, and they have a site that on their property that the storm drainage from our road could use. Then it's a question of valuing, and then
the cell phone is humming.
You know, there are established ways to value that kind of thing, but it would be really based on the professional judgment of probably the engineers and either stormwater engineers or traffic engineers, whatever it might be. Yeah.
No humming.
Can we sing?
Okay. Any more questions from staff, or do you want to do a further presentation?
Well, the other thing that I was going to mention is, generally speaking, I think one of the things that we found from Burke was the more quickly the city can get money, the more we can have inflation not work against us. If we got a dollar now, over the course of time, that dollar is going to be worth less and less. You know that. Those of you that keep your money under your mattresses, it doesn't earn as much as if you kept it in a bank.
You shouldn't do that.
You really shouldn't do that. There are strategies that we can look at, and it's the rebate program that the city administrator and the mayor have talked a little bit about. That is, there is sometimes the potential for the city to get the money up front in the form of the impact fee payment, and then to rebate it back for certain retailers or certain businesses that generate significant sales tax over the course of time. That way the city gets that money and can then go and complete that project, followed by, in time, getting a sales tax where we would then rebate a percentage of that back to either the developer or, in some cases, the initial property owner. As we've heard, a lot of these large format retailers in their pro forma, do I get a green light at the end of costing out everything, don't calculate getting a rebate back in a couple of years. However, a property owner who's selling it to a retailer very much wants that money back, and it might make more difference to them than to that retailer. The one thing to keep in mind, though, is the rebate is a net loss for the city, where you would be paying back a percentage out, and you would not be recouping that through your impact fees.
And the other aspect, I think we talked about that in the administrator's report, is the making of the market. And maybe this is something that our folks from Burke can talk about. This is that, to take Slater, for example, the biggest hurdle is going to be the first big retailer to go at Slater. It's almost like it's easy. Once you get the first person in, it's almost like fundraising. The last dollars are the easiest to get because, you know, you've already defined the success. People see success. So be it on Main Street or be it at Slater or Grandview, if we were to get one big box store, that makes it so much easier for another big box store or medium box or small boxes to follow on, because literally some of these business models are find out where, you know, the big retailer goes, and then we want to be within so many, you know, feet or miles from it, be it a fast food store or something else. So the idea of the rebate for the large sales tax generator is to really two things. One is to kind of soften that high traffic impact fee over time. And secondly, to make the market. And once the market is made, then others will follow in, and then the land prices start supporting the costs of the transportation impact fee. The traffic has already been generated by one or more of the large retailers, and so those retailers that fast food, for example, that rely on someone, you know, going to a big box store and then on the way home or during lunch stopping off and getting something to eat or picking up a pair of shoes somewhere, they realize that the market there exists when it did not exist. So Slater's a great example. Right now, it appears to be a great location, but no one's been there yet. But once we get the first one in, the second, third, and fourth is just going to be that much easier.
Councilperson Watson?
We had talked before about maybe making a COLA so that we wouldn't have to revisit it every year, that we would do the TIFs and we would somehow determine that, you know, every year it went up by a certain percentage based on cost. Is that something we still think we want to do? Or?
That has been mentioned. We didn't go in that direction, but we have mentioned. I'm not reading lips very well.
We do have every 2 years, every odd year, a cost of living increase that is in there. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we're not going to be doing these changes, you know, this might be the last one unless we do a planned action for the next mm-hmm. foreseeable future, just so we can have that consistency.
So this, I just want to clarify, so this TIF is going to be set until some council sometime in the future changes it, or will it change every odd year?
Well,
both.
A lot of actions you do as a city council can certainly be changed by other councils.
They're all meaningless. It just
not very much that you do is locked in stone forever.
Okay. But I still didn't understand if it was something that we wouldn't have to do, that every 2 years it's just going to go up whether we do anything?
On the COLA, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Look. But on the TIF.
Yeah, on the TIF, our intention right now, and then this is direction we would need from you, would be that once we set the transportation impact fee, there would be an automatic cost of living escalator over time. So we, and the council members who've been on the council for a longer period of time can certainly understand the analogy to our water sewer fees. You know, no one likes raising water sewer fees, but what ends up happening is you wait too long and you have to increase it by more than everyone's comfortable with. So for our water sewer and a lot of our other fees, we do have an automatic cost of living escalation.
I'm comfortable with the COLA. It's easier than waiting every 3 years and then raising it 75%
right.
suddenly.
It, longer than three. We
it
waited
was longer.
14
20?
Years.
Yeah.
it was ironic. In the 2005 comp plan I was just looking at, it said what we really need to do is increase our impact fees by at least 100% and add Thornton into the factor. Didn't do either of those, and we waited another 6 years before we changed it.
As a question for Burke, consultant. It's my understanding there to kind of summarize in my little head that if we felt we could get $4,300 in a TIF, it wouldn't make property holders thrilled or developers thrilled. But if we could get that, that's the most we could get to cover as much of our projects that we can and pass along as much as we could upon developers. Is that what you're saying? That's the threshold, $4,300.
I don't know if that's the actual threshold amount. Jory and Greg will probably know about sort of what the maximum.
Yeah,
that's about
the,
okay.
It is. Yeah.
Okay. So so my question is that amount being charged right now elsewhere, and people are paying that amount?
Yeah. You probably Larry probably knows about. Yeah, I know a few cities.
The highest rate that I'm aware of is the city of Sammamish, and they have a $14,000 per trip fee. City of Duval's about $6,000. A few other locations are in the $4,000 to $6,000 range.
Cedar Woolley
has multiple zones and districts. They range anywhere from $800 to something.
So why would I? Why would we as a council be hesitant to get close to that number if that is being paid elsewhere? And that would put us in the best position as a city to, I mean, what's the down, why do 39? I saw it recommended 39 here. Why not recommended 43? What am I missing here?
It was really psychological, just to try to get below 4,000.
The real answer is, let's be honest here, someone has to pay that.
Right.
Well, someone has to pay for the roads.
Yeah. But the point, and that may be the point you're making, the lower we do TIF,
it's going to be development and the city, but it's the scale.
Exactly.
And we, you know.
Right. And as you saw, I think in my report, I put in here that if we were to do the 4,200 based on the present value, we have $39 million worth of projects. We would get about 18.7 in TIF. We would get about 15.8 in sales tax and another 7.4 in TBD sales tax. So it's about $42 million. So for 39,
what was the last number? The TBD.
Actually, I think this is I think it's 8.7 million is what the TBD.
Okay, lots of time in the other agenda. Remember that. You have lots of questions. Hold your questions, because if we handle the agenda right, this discussion will have lots of time later. Break till 6 o'clock.
Clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson?
Here.
Councilmember Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Olson?
Here.
Councilmember Ingram?
Here.
Councilmember Musler?
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman?
Yes. Mission in action.
He'll be.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Here.
All present and accounted for, we think. So.
His glasses are here.
He's not dead in the
He left his coat, so we assume he's coming back.
Yeah.
Quick, someone go find Lloyd. Okay, next up is the public comment period. Public comment, I have two people signed up for the public comment, and then I'll go to the audience. This is the point in the audience when Zimmerman has arrived with snacks for everybody.
Bring enough for everybody?
That's the way it used to work at school. So we'll have the two people on this list, and anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to the council, I'll look around and you can raise your hand, and we'll get everyone up that wishes to speak to the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. So not on tonight's agenda. So the first person signed up for the public comment period is Mr. Doug Robertson. Welcome, sir.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor. My
My name is Doug Robertson, 900 DuPont. Thank you for hearing me. I'll keep it very brief. The questions you are asking requires experience, background, and know-how. What the impacts will do of a traffic impact fee on the residual land value, you should talk to people who do that every day. What it does to decrease in total cash value so you have less funding for your schools, talk to the people who do it every day. I would ask if you have a study session, take input from somebody more than a consultant. Take input from people who do it all the time. I see projects come and go because of TIFs, come and go because of transportation currency problems, sewer impact fees, school impact fees, and on the other side, critical areas ordinances, stormwater fees. It's not just one thing. It's not just one TIF. It's the whole ball. Because at the same time you're talking about TIF, you have to look at your critical areas ordinance, your stormwater fee, and then the competition. Is Bellingham going to cut theirs because they're about to lose the big box store? I would ask that if you want this, if you want the accurate information, consultants can provide you a general idea, but through our office, we've closed more deals on both residential and commercial property, and in the last 5 years, lost more deals because of these issues. That's the information you need. And so I'd ask that we would, of course, make ourselves available if the opportunity were granted. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. John Freeberg is signed up.
I did mean to be on that one.
We can't allow that to happen.
Sorry about that. I'll be on that one. Don't drink
deal. Anyone else from the audience that wishes to address the council on any other issue? A hand up. Welcome. Come forward, please.
My name is Nina Cox. I live at 5650 Correll Court in Ferndale. And I'm here tonight to give a big thank you to two city employees. One is Janice Morlega and the other is Bo Westport. They not only came out in our neighborhood and looked at crosswalks with me and explained in detail what they could do and what they couldn't do that was reasonable, but then they came back at 7 o'clock at night on another night and talked to our board. And it was just wonderful to be able to get that firsthand information. So our board actually voted to spend the money to put in one crosswalk ourselves, since the city could only do one. So we're going to do two, and we're really happy with that solution. They did a wonderful job of explaining all that and making it clear to everyone. So thank you again very much.
Thank you for coming forward.
Okay, performance review.
Students are allowed. You have permission to come forward. A hand up. Great. Okay, mark it down that he gets extra credit. Everyone, when you go to school tomorrow, tell the instructor he gets extra credit because he's brave enough to come forward. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Karen McKay. I'm a student. I was just wondering, I live all the way out in Custer, and I have to drive my little brother and my older brother to school every morning. But when it snows, we don't have any snow plows that go out through there. Like, maybe once it does, when the snow's already gone, kind of thing. I was just wondering if there's anything you guys can do about that, because it's really, my mom's iffy on me driving through it. I mean, I've been doing it for a couple of years, but she's still like, I don't know, kind of thing. And I mean, I need to get them to school. I'm their only transportation, besides the bus, but it's hard enough getting them up to get on the bus as it is. So, I don't know. I was just wondering if there's like anything you guys could possibly do about that.
Transfer that question over to our public works director. All
right.
You said that you live out in the Custer area?
Correct.
I'm thinking, is that in the county, probably outside of the city limits, and it's probably in the county. So in the city limits, and we just plow the city streets, so we're just responsible for those streets. So I'm not sure which streets that you actually take.
I stay on Vista the whole way, and then I cross the Grandview intersection.
Okay, and so Vista would be one of our routes that we, is a higher priority that we do plow. So hopefully as you get close to the city limits, then you got that nice plowed street.
Okay, it's just from before the intersection on Vista, like towards Enterprise, the Enterprise Cemetery, from there, all the way through Grandview, up on Grandview, and then Thornton and everything is really icy. And I was just
so the power of public officials, and all of the council will tell you, and the mayor will tell you that when we get emails from people asking us to do things, we read them, and so you can email the county executive, or you could look up in the county public works, and I would urge you to do that because
Barbara Brenner,
all of us read our emails and go, oh, we should do something like that.
All right.
Yeah, or, you know, if you want to send an email to me at the city, then I could forward that on to the county.
Okay.
The county Public Works Director.
Sweet, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for coming forward. Yep. Questions? Okay, Councilperson Metzler.
It's McKay, right?
Yes.
Mr. McKay, so you you drive safely.
Oh, of course, yes.
And you take your two brothers to school?
Oh, my brother and my sister, sorry, mm-hmm. I messed up on that.
And I bet you make your mom pretty proud.
I try.
Good for you. Keep doing it.
Oh, no.
Come back and talk to us again, please.
Excellent credit. Of course, thank you.
I know your mom is spoke at council, and she should be proud.
Thank you.
Good job. Okay, anything else? See, that wasn't so bad, was it? Anyone else from the audience? No? Seeing none? Okay, moving on. Council, I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Yes. One of the items on the consent agenda is a transportation element review motion. If you remember, back in December, we passed the modifications to the comp plan transportation element with, for lack of a better word, kind of placeholders for text to fall into what your desires were. We've asked you to look over the text that's included in your packet to let us know if we got it right. But based on advice from our consultants and legal advice, we're suggesting that because the text really brings life to what your intent was, we're suggesting that we not pass it tonight on the consent agenda, but instead on March 5th have another public hearing. So that way anyone out there who's now read the text has the ability to come forward and let their feelings be known. And that way it really makes the process just that much more transparent and allows for more public participation.
Hands up, I saw Councilperson Goodrich first, then Hanson, then Watson.
I was wondering if we could pull the surplus resolution for the Vista home.
Okay. So we'll go. Transportation element will be moved to a public hearing after discussion. Surplus resolution, let's go D2. D2, surplus Vista. Okay, next up was Councilperson Hanson.
Well, I was just going to move to remove the item from the consent agenda and place it on the March 5th agenda with a public hearing.
Second. Okay, we'll move second. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. That goes to public hearing. Councilperson Watson.
I just had a question. The transportation element, are we able to make any changes? You said we can only make one change a year. Was that change last year? So I'm trying to understand what it is you want us
right.
to do.
Yeah. Technically, the Growth Management Act says that you're really supposed to do changes to the comprehensive plan once every 12 months. Okay. That way the citizens aren't faced with the change of the month clock.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that you're restricted to literally waiting 12 months from one change to another. If there are emergencies or if there are extenuating circumstances that the city feels requires clarification, we can actually amend the comp plan more often than every 12 months.
So will you change the way it's reading to include the TBD that we did get the sales tax? Because there's some talk about, you know, you should think about doing that. Or is that just too hard with everything? That'd be a lot of changes.
Yeah, that would be quite a lot of changes.
So it won't really be completely accurate, but
right.
close.
I'd rather, since we did spend a lot of time and effort leading up to your discussion and your passage in December, I'd like to limit the public hearing next meeting to the verbiage that puts in place what you intended in December.
So just that red line version that...
Exactly. But now, and I guess importantly, too, should you feel like some of the language did not accurately represent what you felt the council did in December. Please let us know. And that's, again, one of the reasons why we'll do this again on March 5th. That way, not only will you have the ability to propose alterations if you feel so fit, but the public will also be able to testify, which may lead you to then make other changes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay, Council, I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda, pulling the transportation element review motion to March 5th and the surplus resolution of Washington Vista Home to D2.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, moving on. This is a public hearing on the transportation concurrency ordinance. We'll go to our planning director, Yori Burnett, proud graduate of Ferndale High School.
Didn't actually graduate. I was going to tell you.
That's it. Cheating on the resume.
As by way of introduction, want to make it clear that we've been talking a lot about traffic and transportation tonight. Started off with traffic impact fees, transportation element. This is traffic concurrency, not to be confused with the other two. So I realize that there may be folks out in the crowd who want to talk about traffic impact fees. You might have that chance a little bit later, but this is transportation concurrency. So what is transportation concurrency? We talk a lot, and I might have even included it as an exhibit in here. We talk a lot about, on page 161, there is an exhibit, about the balance and the way that impact fees relate to SEPA, the State Environmental Policy Act, how they relate to street standards like frontage improvements, and how they relate to transportation concurrency. Transportation concurrency is really the timing of when developments are needed. It's a law. It's a part of the Growth Management Act and is required by state law. All jurisdictions have to have concurrency. The basic premise of concurrency is that it's great if the city adopts a level of service standard saying this is how we want our roads to act. It's much more difficult, as you all know, when you have limited funding to actually move forward and complete those projects in a timely manner, because there's always something that might be grabbing more attention. There might be something that you felt you were elected for that should really, you feel the money should go elsewhere. There's always that road that you might travel on that might not be way up on the top of the list, but you feel that it should be up there. Transportation concurrency is designed so once it, as a result of development or other actions, once a transportation corridor, road, intersection falls beneath your level of service, you have 6 years at the max to complete the project, to fix it, to get funding for it, or to stop development, or to reduce your level of service standards. Luckily, Ferndale, because we have been blessed with road infrastructure that travels actually pretty well, we haven't had occasion to see our level of service drop, to see our adopted level of service actually break. That's a good thing, but it's not going to be something that lasts forever. So what staff is proposing, what I've just described, is probably the most interesting part of it. The rest of it and a lot of the text is really procedural. How do we make sure that we can measure when a road intersection drops beneath the level of service? How do we make it so it's as streamlined as possible so we're not starting from scratch every single time a new development comes in? And how do we then require that development or the city make those improvements? What we've proposed in a nutshell is a planning-based approach where the city and its transportation consultants, Transpo, will develop and continue to develop a framework so that we will have a measure of our major transportation corridors to understand just how much capacity we have left in them. Let's say that right now Main Street could stand to take an additional 500 cars before it drops beneath the level of service. We would then know that if Mr. Freeberg comes in and proposes a 30-lot subdivision, that we now have a capacity of 470 cars. Now the subdivision comes in and it gets reduced and reduced and reduced. this ordinance would allow us to identify a minimum threshold for review so that when Mr. Taylor comes in with a single-family residence, we don't need to look at every single-family residence. We'd be looking at 30 p.m. peak hours, so a sizable development. It would also allow us, as we go through, to start to slow down and to become more certain on our reviews. When we know that a intersection is about to fail or is within 2 miles an hour of it failing is how we would measure it, we would know to look at each development as it comes in a little bit more closely. And then, of course, when we go through these periodic annual reviews, and we would do that to measure just how much capacity we have left, we would make sure that that coincides with your annual six-year transportation improvement program review. So if we go through and we say Main Street at La Bounty is going to need an improvement in the next 10 years, next year it's in the next 8 years, and then all of a sudden we get one of these developments we're talking about, and we say we have now dropped beneath our level of service, we need to put that project on our TIP, that will be able to make sure that the process is organic and so that it makes sense as it goes through. Because we want to make sure that we have a good administrative process, we will need to have a number of things running in the background, a tracking mechanism, spreadsheet. Transpo is going to need to finish its final modeling to make sure that we have all of our tolerances correct. So what we are proposing to you is the adoption of this ordinance, allowing us until March 30th, so it wouldn't go into effect until March 30th, allowing us that time to put in the administrative guidelines that would enable this to run smoothly. That's what we have. I'm available to answer any questions. Larry is also available. It is a public hearing.
We have a public hearing. People signed up. Questions for staff about this ordinance before we go to the public hearing. Councilperson Watson?
Just a quick question. Do you know how much staff time it might cost? Is it just going to be on the front end of setting up the spreadsheet? Because you talked about doing different studies. I'm just wondering how much staff time that's going to add to you.
Well, there were two alternatives. One of them could be it's not the project-based approach, where we would essentially be requiring a transportation study created by private transportation consultants for almost every development. That's going to take an awful lot of staff time, and it's especially going to probably be our public works director who has the expertise to review them and question it. We decided not to go down that route and rather than go in that approach, front load it, where we do have a more robust planning-based approach so that we can look at them, just plug them in, and the exception rather than the rule would be requiring that transportation study. On an annual basis, we would be conducting actual kind of ride-alongs to measure what is the corridor travel time on our major corridors. We'd do that enough to get a scientifically valid sample and then be able to compare that to years previous and to be as well as our development tracking sheet.
Is that something that ride along? Is that something you'll do or something transport will do?
We are trying to keep as much of it in-house as possible, so it's likely that we would and then probably maybe send some of the data to Transpo to verify, at least in the first couple years, so we know how to do it.
Thank you.
Questions for staff? Councilperson Goodrich?
I was looking on page 142. I was trying to find it earlier. The difference between SEPA, where it says something about immediate concurrency, and then the full six-year time period allowed by state. Can you explain that a little bit better? Or something?
Yes. So right now we have something called immediate concurrency, which sounds fantastic. If you break something or drop it beneath the level of service, you cannot open up your doors until you have mitigated the issue. As we've noticed, a lot of these projects cost a lot of money, take some time to raise the funds, require other agency review and even federal review in the case of freeway overpasses and interchanges. So an immediate concurrency really was not possible in all practical sense. The state law requires 6 years for it to be complete, and virtually all other jurisdictions adopt that six-year period. That's what we're proposing to do. Now, SEPA, on the other hand, allows us to identify issues that are potentially adverse environmental impacts. If you put this development here, you're going to cause a potentially unsafe situation or a potential other situation that you must mitigate, putting a stop sign or a traffic light or a roundabout or something like that, immediately, because we cannot let a safe situation to turn into an unsafe situation with our knowledge. We would expect to handle, continue to handle all projects through SEPA except for the ones in the planned action, which the SEPA has already been done, especially the smaller projects that are possibly off of the corridors. We'd also be able to use SEPA within the corridors. As part of our planning-based approach and as part of the model, what we're going to be able to do is to say in the various districts, in the various transportation neighborhoods that we have in the city, and we have about 9 of them, and you can kind of figure out where they are. There's like a Slater one, there's a planned action one, there's a downtown one, there's a Church Road one. We can figure out about where the distribution of trips will come from and go to. So we would know if you put a gas station in the church neighborhood, probably 80% of your trips are going to come from within this area, 10% on Main Street, 10% on Vista, let's say. So we're going to then be able to model that on our tracking mechanism and then figure out slowly, here's how everything is impacted.
Okay. So that SEPA is more for outside the planned action area?
SEPA is still very much a part of the planned action area because we've done a mega SEPA for it. And so we're going to be applying those mitigations. Your next council meeting, you're going to have the planned action ordinance, which is basically saying, here's how we put those SEPA mitigations into effect when development comes in. But for the rest, yes.
Councilperson Mutchler?
You're the use of the 30 p.m. peak trip hours. Is that a measure of the actual, is that number being used of the actual traffic on a corridor, or is this the proposed development number?
It would be the proposed development.
So then what if you have a bunch of 15 and 20 events? Does this safeguard against accumulation of a bunch of smaller things breaking the system kind of under our noses?
Yes, very much so. Let's say that we have 500 trip capacity. We would be putting in those developments as they come by, and annually we would be able to measure and see. So every year we would get basically a census, if you will, so that we would know here's right where we are right now. Over the next 12 months, we are going to slowly we'll have an idea of where we are, but we won't be certain. However, once we drop to 200 trips, let's say, left to go, or 100 trips, I don't know exactly where it is, we would become much more specific as far as what we're reviewing, where we would potentially reduce that threshold from 30
smaller
down.
Could get reviewed as you're getting closer to that threshold.
Exactly. We're just like when you're coming into your destination, you start putting on the brakes to see.
You know, one of the administrative guideline things that Yori inferred that we need to still do, we wanted to kind of use these traffic sheds, run the travel demand model, and identify, say, for residential development in the north part of the city, how many out of 100 trips, how many would end up on Vista, Main Street, Slater. So then we get a general idea. So we can take that same information. Hey, we had 15 lot subdivision and a 10 lot subdivision, so we can still use that same information to get an estimate of how much traffic's actually impacting each of the concurrency corridors without doing a detailed study. And that's where we probably have a situation of a corridor is forecast to be 5 miles an hour over its standard. We probably don't need to do much with those. We're going to keep tracking them. But if it gets within a mile an hour or so, we're going to track it a little closer. Because what the theory is, we don't want to get down below that and actually have to stop the development in here. The intent is to get out ahead, feed into the six-year transportation improvement program, and start putting that out. And then provide the council and a management tool for basically a state of these key corridors. How close are we getting? How much growth is already in the pipeline? Maybe it's 20 miles an hour right now, but based on the developments we've approved, we expect in the next, when those developments come online, it'd be 17 miles an hour. The standard might be 13, so you still got a ways to go. But if the standard was 16, you'd want to take a little bit closer look at all those small developments coming in.
So then how and why 30? Is that just from experience that seems to work well, or the Goldilocks theory?
Well,
it's just right, and why?
It was a number, basically, as we were talking to staff, you know, DOT uses 10 for their SEPA threshold, and when you run an intersection level of service, you don't see any change at 10 here. Some jurisdictions use 20, others have used 100, so we kind of picked something that was fairly conservative to begin with, you know, kind of along the lower side as opposed to something really, really high. You could certainly change that number to 20, and it just...
But that creates more work.
It creates another threshold. You can always change it a year from now after you kind of get a feel for it, and saying, 90% of our developments generate 30 or fewer trips, and we're seeing no issues. Or 50 or fewer trips, why are we even looking at 50s? You know, they're not changing anything. So you can look at that each year and maybe tweak the system as it goes.
Councilperson Watson?
I have a question for Mr. Burnett. I'm trying to understand, as you're not losing trips, but as the number of trips that you have goes down, is everybody paying the same, the developer that starts out with a 30, the 30, or is the person at the end going to have to end up paying more because they broke the camel? I mean,
no. Okay. And that's one of the primary reasons why we are doing the planned action, because at some point there is that straw that breaks the camel's back, and rather than have what would have been Pioneer Plaza break it all by itself, we are distributing it all. So it is a connected but separate discussion. In theory, each trip, each of those 30 trips or 100 trips, will have paid the same impact fee.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, questions for staff? No, seeing none. Okay, 6:29, we'll open up the public hearing. Public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the City Council for consideration in their decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it's necessary that you sign up on the sheet that is available on the counter located at the front of the room. I have two up. We'll do the first two people listed, and then we'll go to the audience with hands up if they wish to speak. Written comments may also be submitted to the City Clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum, the microphone. Clearly state your name and address. If you're speaking as representative for another person or organization, so state. State whether you're a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comments to 3 minutes. After all comments are heard, if you have something to add that has not already been stated at the discretion of the mayor, you may be given an additional 2 minutes. The clerk will be timing you and tell you time at the three-minute mark. There will be no demonstration during the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council, staff, and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. After the last person has spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter into regular session. The subject hearing will usually appear as an agenda item for council discussion, decision, or referral. Audience may not comment during the council's deliberations unless questions by the council for clarification. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing to give every person an opportunity to be heard and ensure that no individuals are embarrassed by exercising their right to free speech. So we have two names signed up. First is Doug Robertson, and I put John Freeberg's name on there because I assumed that was the list he wanted to. So, Mr. Robertson, we welcome you once again.
Thank you, Mayor. Doug Robertson, 900 DuPont. I represent Suwannee Lumber, Ferndale Town Center. I'm here also speaking on behalf of my partner, Chet Lackey, with regard to the Golf Course Center. You already did a great job. In the planned action process, as we've worked together, this is something we talked about over a year and a half ago to try to incorporate this ordinance into it. And so I would say on behalf of all my clients, we're a proponent. Little does Mr. Burnett know that sitting in his inbox is an email with some detailed language. I've had both the fortunate and the unfortunate opportunity to be participating in the city of Ferndale and then jurisdictions to the south applying this before. So I have some detailed changes to the language that seem to fit what would work with. So I'd recommend that maybe I'll get a chance to talk with him about it. Also, I'd like to be able to speak with him about the tie-in of SEPA, the traffic impact fees, and this transportation concurrency ordinance. There are some limitations. Once you adopt TIFs,
and a transportation concurrency ordinance, you cannot step out and also apply CEPA requirements. Those are legal limitations, and I'd like the opportunity to speak with Yori about that so we can clear that up. The only particular things I'd ask that you add are two different things, and this naturally come up because of problems. One is adopt some standard for the computational model, and if you're using a vendor standard, it's come up in two different situations where they changed the model and everything went haywire, or they changed the vendor and everything changed. So I'd say that there be some requirement that the computational model be consistent so you don't, in 2014, change the model a bit and skew the whole system. But probably the most important is that each year this city council adopt the approved transportation facilities. This has to be approved by the city council. The reason is each year you'll get the six-year transportation plan. In the ordinance, there's something called approved transportation facilities. That says that, well, we, the city, see that in the next 3 years we will have the money to build this, so we'll put it on the list. That's a policy decision. The downfall of this system would be if the property east of the freeway were to come online and magically we have a buyer, and we walk in and say, here's our transportation fees, we want to be in. Well, right now, if we throw those numbers into your transportational model, and the east side roundabouts not in your approved transportation facilities, we would fail and not get a transportation concurrency certificate. So if you're not in the, if you don't have the annual adoption of the approved transportation facilities for you, you can't make the policy decisions of where in the next six years do we have to put the money, because that's a vital decision, because where you put the money defines who and who will not get transportation concurrency. Again, hats off to the staff. This is something we talked about through the process. I think it's a great ordinance, and I'll get a hold of Mr. Burnett to add him any details. Thank you again.
Questions for Mr. Robertson? Okay, none. Perfect timing, 3 minutes. This is groundbreaking. An attorney that hit the time mark with a smile on his face. Mr. Freeburg, welcome.
Freeburg. I live at 918 Robbins Place, Everson, Washington. We've been talking about impact fees tonight. Been talking about a lot of things. I believe the subject tonight should relate more to probably the traffic and how to solve this problem around here. And what's proposed out here on Main Street is an estimate of $22 to $24 million in roundabouts or street lighting, whatever the case may be. And number two is, the problem with that is, do you solve the traffic problem? Back in 1996, the comprehensive plan of City of Ferndale said this. This is talking about the Thorn Road overpass, and we won't go there very long. This project very efficiently connects Northwest Ferndale to I-5. Significant traffic volumes on this lowers traffic volumes on Vista Drive and Molloy, downtown streets and main streets, while drawing a modest increased traffic to Thornton. That was in 1996. About 11 years later, the City of Ferndale adopted a new comprehensive plan and is an alternative. Thornton to I-5 Portalway Interchange. This version of extension of Thornton Road would not connect to Portalway east of I-5 and would not be in that great crossing at the railroad tracks, but would instead connect existing Portalway ramp system at the interchange to the south of Thornton, Newkirk alignment, using elevated structures for portions of these connections. That would be over the railroad tracks. Then it says, this concept would provide the highest level of direct access to I-5 from Thornton Way, and thus reduce traffic volumes on Main Street across the Nerchuck River by 29%, and eliminate the need to widen that existing two-lane bridge, which you can't do. The project provides new routes between Northwest Ferndale and I-5 that will be available in times of high floods. Now, taking that scenario right there, it would reduce traffic by 29%. It would give an access to the hill that you people represent. You don't represent the developer. You don't represent those coming down the pike. You represent the citizens of this town. And this has been a sore spot in this town for the last 40 years. Now, I know they talked about this overpass of Thornton Road, and everyone came to the conclusion it was too expensive. But when Second Street came in, there happened to be a roundabout down there, and this would connect to that. Now, if you could reduce the traffic on Main Street by 30%, I'll take another couple minutes, if you don't mind. If you can reduce the traffic by, sorry about that, Sam, 30%, wouldn't that be more sensible, more feasible, and make more sense? Now, you're going to spend $22 million or $24 million. This is what the estimate is out there. I don't know who comes up with that estimate. I don't care. But I can tell you one thing. If you took $24 million over here on Main Street and put it over there on 2nd Street and connect to Thornton Road and up that hill, I think you could solve this traffic problem down here. And you know what? It wouldn't matter what you charge for impact fees. Least you would get a benefit. And that's what we're looking for. I can't figure out why we're going to cram all this stuff down here in between 86 tenths of a mile and spend $22 million and not know if we got something that works. I think that's what you got to look at. And, you know, I deal with numbers all the time. We deal realistically and everything else. No one has come up yet with a price tag of what this thing is going to cost. So how do you figure your impact fees? How do you know if you're good or you're bad? That's where you got to start with. You got to figure the end result and say, well, yeah, here we're at. So I thank you for your time. I have all this stuff. I know I can't talk any longer, but I think before we go too much further, take a revisit that issue, and I think it'll make sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greenberg. Okay, anyone else in the audience that would like to speak on this? Currency ordinance. One. Welcome.
I'm Kirsten Matt. I live in 1257 Deer Creek Drive. And this was under the Traffic Conservancy when to make improvements. I was just wondering if and when Deer Creek would get improvements. Because Axon got painted not that long ago in Deer Creek. I think it was at least 6 years ago that it got paved, and I was just wondering if and when Deer Creek would get improvements.
Yeah, the Deer Creek area is not within the city limits of Ferndale. It ends right there at Old Settler, the new development just on the curve. So there's a thing, boy, it's an interesting subject that would be we discuss all the time, because in the county, no impact fees are charged for. There are no impact fees on any development in the county, so no impact fees were collected, and I don't know. If we ever were to annex that far, that's an argument, is you should annex if you should start doing improvements ahead of time. So.
I think they need a class trip to the county council meeting.
Yeah. Well, because there are other problems. I mean, there's no sidewalks. Stormwater is at a limited area. So, you should all go with her to the Whatcom County Council and speak. So, that one is a Whatcom County issue that we have discussed on a regular basis.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay. Thank you.
Seriously, they should go to the meeting, the two of them together.
Yeah.
It's a county issue.
It should. Speaking before public officials really does have a benefit, so go for it. Okay, anyone else from the audience on the concurrency? Okay, seeing none, at 6:41:33, I'll close the public hearing on the concurrency ordinance and await for action, knowing that we have someone that wants to add, two standards to the?
And I spoke with the city administrator and briefly looked at Mr. Robertson's comments. If the council was comfortable, we would still recommend, since this is not going to go into effect until March 30th, wanting to repeat that. What we could do and what we were actually planning on doing in March anyway is amending the fee code to reflect a concurrency charge for staff review as well as reflecting what, if any, of Mr. Robertson's comments that would be necessary. So we could do both.
How would they state their motion?
They could adopt it as is right now, effective March 30th. We could then clarify anything that we wish to in March, either with a new public hearing or, yes, with a new public hearing.
I see hands up. I think Councilperson Olson was first and Hansen was second.
Are we going to have to hold a public hearing all over again for the changes that might be made? Because people would want to have input on maybe what he says.
I would believe that to be safe, you would.
Mm-hmm. I would think so.
To be safe, you would. Mm-hmm. I've learned from the Growth Management Hearing Board to be safe, public hearings are better.
This didn't come up today. Why didn't you voice your concerns earlier, Mr. Robertson?
A couple reasons. One is I was reading all of the other reports that had come up on this. I had to read through the transportation element, and frankly, this was last in line. And I had spoken with Mr. Burnett, and we had, I hadn't read the details till this afternoon because I just didn't get to it. But on the other hand, we had been talking, and these are very, very detailed.
I personally have a problem with that just because he didn't have the time to do it. We were going to hold up everything else. That's not enough excuse.
Well, you could move forward with the ordinance written by staff tonight. Adoption is not till March. So I'm understanding is that then we would present these changes to you.
If
you have another public hearing, that the public hearing would be on if you decided to add those items.
Right.
So tonight you'd basically approve what staff has written, and then another public hearing on adoption in March if you wanted to add things.
I just don't want to go down a trail where next time somebody else comes up with some more corrections, and we keep going and going.
I think, was I stating your intention?
The effective date would be March the 30th. Regardless of which way we go, if we are to consider Mr. Robertson's comments, we haven't reviewed them yet, we would need to have a public hearing. The only way that we would not be able to have a public hearing is if we chose just to disregard it and move forward.
The public hearing would be just on those two issues, though.
This will also give a chance not only for staff to review the suggested modifications to see if they make sense or come up with some alternatives, but it will also give a chance for you all to read those, to talk about it in committee, and then bring it back to a council meeting should the committee feel like they were appropriate.
Okay. Of course, the other option, I guess, is to extend the public hearing to them and not vote on it.
Yeah, but then I guess it does get into the death by a thousand amendments.
I'll go to Councilperson Hansen because he really wants to comment.
Well, I was going to suggest and actually put a motion on the floor that adopts the concurrency ordinance as printed tonight with amendments coming forward by March 30th, and that the additional public hearing be only on the amendments, may not speak on the ordinance as a whole, but only on the amendments.
So I'm going to give a second referring to our clerk for legal.
Yeah.
Under state law, when you are considering something like this, we have to lay out technically only what we're amending. So if you have a specific section of this ordinance you would be amending, we could offer up an ordinance with only those specific sections to change. So if you do agree, if staff were to agree with Mr. Robertson's changes, we could technically offer up an amending ordinance with only those new sections, and that would be the public hearing on only those two items. So I think that would be allowed.
And realize,
that's the motion that I'm putting on the floor.
You're making a motion now?
It's to adopt this concurrency ordinance as presented with amendments to come in the future, and the public hearing to be on those amendments only. It may be that through the committee process, there won't be any amendments presented.
It would,
I guess without a legal interpretation of that, it might be wiser just to say that we're going to have a public hearing on the whole thing. Then we're not open to any dispute.
Well, there's nothing magical about March 30th. It's only because we've established that as the date that the concurrency ordinance as written would take effect. Now, we can amend it in March. We can amend it in October. We can amend it monthly. I mean, there's no magic amount. We usually, as you know, there are times when we come back and offer revisions to a lot of our ordinances. So I think that if you're comfortable that the staff report or the staff ordinance as written on concurrency is sufficient as of now, I would recommend that you approve it. If in a month or in a year we decide that there's revisions that have been brought to our attention by anyone, we will bring it back to you for consideration.
Okay. Councilperson Watson?
I think that's what I prefer, just to have, make it cleaner. We adopt what we have in front of us to take effect on March 30th, and if in the next few weeks or months something changes, then we could move to adopt it, that section of the code.
Okay. Clerk would like to speak.
Councilmember Hansen, because there's been a second yet. I was going to say before a second, so you could change it.
Yes.
To simply move to adopt this ordinance as is, should staff decide to bring forth changes or through committee, we could do this over again.
And I was going to do exactly that, is to change it so that we adopt this with the understanding, well, it's not with the understanding, that we adopt it as presented, and I'd like the option to speak if we get a second.
I'll second.
Okay, so Councilperson Hansen.
Well, since Greg clarified that we can amend this at any time, when amendments are proposed, the public hearing would be only on those amendments at that point. Anyway,
yeah.
We don't need to have that in the language of this motion.
Okay. Right. So does everybody understand Councilperson Hansen's motion?
Yep.
Does it need to say effective March 30th?
We would like it to be effective March 30th.
Is that in the bottom of the ordinance?
I did say that. Didn't the second hearing say that?
It's actually section 2 of the ordinance says it's effective March 30th.
But does the motion have to say?
No.
Because it's part of the ordinance. Yep.
Okay, so as written, Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, my only concern is if an amendment comes to staff, shouldn't at least also come to at least the committee?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, as much as I appreciate what staff does, I think it needs to come all of it to at least some of the council.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, what if staff says we don't want this, but I think council should still hear it, is what I'm saying.
I think that we have direction pretty clear that you would like to see Mr. Robertson's suggestions.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, next up is the bid award for the civil portion of the new police station. Public Works will present Jennifer or Katie. Okay. Katie Ratter.
Welcome.
Thank you. So we put out the bid for the civil portion of the police station project. This is the third phase in a four-phase project. We started this project in, I believe, fall of 2010 with the shop and initial site work, and then Paul Curcio is currently working on the building portion. And so this is the next phase, which will do some site improvements, some storm utility improvements, parking lot improvements, some pedestrian facilities up to the face of the building, flagpole plaza, and that sort of thing. So it was a really competitive bidding climate. We received 12 bids. The engineer's estimate on this portion of the work was $317,000 plus, and our low bid was submitted by Faber Brothers in the amount of $237,063.85. So what we're asking is that council allow us to award to Faber Brothers for that amount, and plus we're asking for a
10% contingency allowance. So the total contract amount or authorized amount would be $260,769.85.
Council Person Ingram.
Katie?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have to recalculate the final cost on that because of the new sales tax?
Not until July 1st, right?
That doesn't kick in until July 1st, right? Okay.
Disregard. Council Person Olson and then Mutchler.
If my iPhone did his math correctly, that's 25% under budget for all of the naysayers in the newspaper that will be blogging about it tomorrow, correct?
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Your iPhone is correct.
Thank you.
Comment duly noted. Councilperson Mutchler, then Hanson.
And in light of that, I'm happy to make motion that we approve the low bid to Faber Brothers, which includes a 10% contingency for a total of $260,769.85.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, we move and second. Further discussion? Councilperson Hanson, that was just you were waiting for.
Yep.
Okay. Any other further discussion from council? Okay, seeing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Seeing none, 7-0. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next up we have D2. That's the surplus resolution for the Washington and Vista, clearly a fine residence.
You can.
Councilperson Goodrich, your reason for pulling?
Well, I was just curious. I guess I've never seen a house up on a surplus list. And so I was wondering what did that, I know we surplus vehicles, which means they go for sale.
You surplus one on Second Avenue.
Yeah. I didn't remember. Maybe I wasn't on the council at that. I was just curious to wonder what's going to happen. What does surplusing it mean? And
we have one person has come forward and said I'd like to purchase the house and move it. So we have to put that up for bid. So we have to declare it surplus. Someone may come forward and want to move the house. Someone may want to dismantle the house and keep all the pieces. But on a public process, we have to open up to the public to see who presents the best offer for the house.
Okay, that's what I was curious, whether it be demolished or how that all.
My personal goal would be I'd love to see it just moved because that's the greatest form of recycling is. The greenest house in the world is the house that you don't have to cut trees down to build.
Okay, that's my question on that.
Yeah, I mean, so what by surplus, and you're saying it's we don't need it, and you're directing us to try to get the best price possible. It's conceivable that we may come back and say no one wants to buy it, so we may come back with alternatives to disposal.
Councilperson Metzler?
Mayor, I'd like to make a motion that we surplus the home at the corner of Vista on Washington.
I'll second it. Okay, move second. Further discussion? Seeing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Thank you, Council. I really do hope someone comes and moves it. I think that's a great action. Okay, the plan action traffic impact fee discussion continues, and my list that we kind of cut off was Councilperson Goodrich had his hand up and Councilperson Hanson. There are others I missed you, but we'll continue on. So we'll give the floor to Councilperson Goodrich.
And for the life of me, I can't remember what I was going to say an hour ago. Okay, maybe if it'll pop back in.
Well, and then I
don't remember what we were talking about when we left
there's
off.
There's other people from the audience that would like to speak, so too we can have that too. So Councilperson Hanson?
I was just about to react to Council Member Mutchler's comment that we should charge the highest impact fee possible, and I strongly object to that. I believe that argument doesn't hold water because it doesn't give you a chance to grow. Because if you charge the highest impact fee possible, they will delay coming, if at all. I think we have to achieve a balance between impact fee and the hope that they will bring additional tax dollars to the city in the way of sales tax and property tax, and that we can use those additional tax dollars rather than just going out and spending them willy-nilly on some pet project that we might have. That we dedicate a portion of those, especially sales tax dollars, to adding to the traffic impact situation. Now, we are going to have impacts. I don't believe it's fair to go out to the community and say, community, you're going to have to pay to let these developers come in here. But through their sales tax, which they are today are taking out of our community and going elsewhere to spend it, I think that's a fair balancing act. I don't know where that figure is. I don't know that these figures that we've been presented tonight are where I'm going to feel comfortable with in terms of the low or the median or what have you. But I do believe that we need to achieve that balance between what the city can do. And to those who say it should be as low as possible in order to attract those people, that's when you're going to stick your citizens for costs that they shouldn't be stuck with. We should not go out and hit up all of our citizens because we failed to set the impact fee high enough. Are we going to lose some people as a result of that? Probably. But those who understand how this system works will probably fill in the gaps.
Before we go, I'd like to kind of respond to Mr. Freeburg. Mr. Freeburg had a great point. I mean, I think all of us on the campaign trail heard people that, you know, Thornton is really on the citizens' minds. And he is right, and we've been talking about Thornton. I think it's important to make a statement that the Second Avenue was always in the council's mind when we started that process. That's phase one. With Thornton over the railroad, not over the whole freeway, over the railroad, I think Larry's getting that now, was always phase two. And so we've started the process, so it's an obligation to finish phase two. So I'll go Councilperson Muchrath's hand, then Goodrichson, then Ingram.
Yeah, and Councilmember Hans, I think we're actually pretty much in agreement. What's that right number? I'm just, in my mind, realizing we sort of get these numbers. Today that we have the number of about $4,300, there's a recommendation of staff at 39. But what if that first number was $5,000? Then we say, well, okay, we'll drop it to $4,400. It's trying to find that number is very hard. And my biggest concern is what we're leaving the city when this is all said and done. Retail development, jobs, all sorts of things like that. But tremendous impacts that the city will have to pay for, and maybe not any extra cash benefit to the city for, I mean, we have to pay for fire and police, everything else. Is there going to be something left over at the end of the day when we do all this stuff?
That's the balance, yeah. That's the balance.
Exactly. Yeah. And I guess, I'd rather err on the high side and say, well, okay, we can always back off of it. Otherwise, you're behind forever, I think.
Goodrich? I was going to bring up a point that's been made at several EDC meetings. When we look at Ferndale versus other communities, and one of the things that has come up at the EDCs is, well, why isn't our office buildings or something being built here in Ferndale? And the issue that they get is the rent that you can charge. Bellingham can charge more per square foot for office space than we can in Ferndale, and at least at this point in time. And I'm sure rental properties is the same way. You could have the exact same buildings in both cities. You're going to get more for it in Bellingham than you are here in Ferndale.
Why is that?
And so what they're saying is that becomes a critical thinking part of builders is, if I'm going to build a building with office space in it or other spaces, what can I charge for rent, and what type of return am I going to get? And right now in Ferndale, they can't get numbers really to pencil to make projects work. So, we got to take that. I think that's a key to take in looking at when we're talking about impact fees. That's one of the things that gets added to their building costs, and therefore it will raise the rent. Will they be able to build their buildings because of that higher fee? Because they can't get the rents. And maybe you already can explain a little bit more why that is. But I know that keeps coming up at EDC meetings over and over again.
Well, and I think that this might be one of those circumstances where everybody's right and everybody's telling the truth, where there is a significant difference in the rents that can be had right now in Ferndale compared to right now in Bellingham. One of the things that I think that we've all struggled with is, does it pencil now? You know, and answering that question, does it pencil now? Could someone come in to Ferndale and be ready to pay, say, $4,300 for a fast food store or general office building? And the answer might be no, that they can't, because the market hasn't yet been made. And who knows what would make the market, but right now it might not pencil. The thing with the impact fees, which is a very different way of calculating things out, I think it's different from how most of our minds work, is that it is forward-looking. It's talking about solving a problem that doesn't yet exist and paying for it. You might not know that you need to pay for this problem because everything is hunky-dory right now. And it's a really different way of looking at it. And I think that that's one of the things that we kind of struggle with sometimes, is talking about these high fees. And who knows if they are too high or too low, because we're not there yet. But saying, gosh, if I can't build today, that means it's too high. That might not be the mathematics that we need to use. Or maybe it is. It becomes a policy decision, where what do you want? Do you want development of this type to come quickly? And you probably have that power in your hands to make that happen. If you had a zero impact fee, you'd probably be coming relatively soon. You also probably have the power to delay it, probably not prevent it, but probably to delay it.
I guess I'd in there, too, that realize that transportation impact fees are not the reason why a lot of businesses decide to go someplace or not. But looking at the list that Yari provided earlier here, you can see that supermarkets have about 10 trips per 1,000 square feet. So if you're building a supermarket, you may spend $2, $3, $5, $8 million, depending on how big the supermarket is, building the supermarket. Spending $1 million or $1.5 million for traffic impact fees probably won't decide whether you build or not. You'll build if you think the market is there for you. It's the old adage of, you know, rooftops and retail. If you have enough rooftops, then retail follows, because you have the shoppers within a geographic area that are willing to come to where you live. There's a reason why the Sammamishes of the world have $14,000 impact fees. It's because they are, at least here up until recently, they were in one of the most heavily growing residential areas in Washington State. And so the retail were following those customers. Use the Blaine example. We saw that they lowered their impact fees to zero. There's not been a building boom in Blaine with zero impact fees. And it's not because the impact fees are zero, or it's because they're a lot. It's because the market isn't there. And we talked about this earlier, that if the market isn't here now, it doesn't matter what the impact fees are. When the market is here, they will build. It needs to make sense. I mean, the impact fees need to make sense, but as we've heard, that then affects the land prices. If you have low enough land prices, high impact fees offset it directly. Or if you're buying a piece of land, you're only willing to pay so much for the land, realizing what the impact fees are. But I guess I don't want people to think that, you know, businesses make decisions to build or not build based on impact fees. They make it based on their market. If they feel like the market is there, they normally are willing to make the investment. That's why you don't see Walmart's out in the middle of the desert. It's awful cheap to build there, but no one's there.
I have Councilperson Ingram, Hansen, Mutchler, Watson. Councilperson Ingram is first.
Yeah, I want to address Mr. Freeberg for just a second, because I'm not sure, John, that you have been here to hear the discussion around this table about the Thornton Overpass. It's very high on our list, and I think it's the idea of this council we're hoping that the economy will pick up enough that people start to feel good, and as soon as that happens, my understanding is that we intend to go to the voters for a general obligation bond and build it. A lot of the engineering work's already been done. We're almost shovel ready, not quite.
interesting enough when you talk about rents. I was at a board meeting just before we left for California. And one of the board members is a commercial real estate broker. And he was discussing the fact that the reason that retail space rentals are cheaper in parts of Ferndale than they are in parts of Bellingham is because we've got crappy buildings. That if the building owners would spend some money and fix the buildings up instead of using them for storage lockers, that we could get much higher rents here because Ferndale is a much better town to do business in than Bellingham is. Now, this is a guy that rents and brokers real estate, commercial real estate on a day-to-day basis, and he was adamant that the biggest detriment we've got in Ferndale right now is the appearance of the buildings in downtown. They're just dumpy. And if you want to come to downtown and you want to rent a nice little space to start a business, and you're paying 35 cents a square foot, you go over to Ferndale Station, and it's $4.50 a square foot, but boy, it looks nice. And if we want to improve downtown, we've got to get some of these building owners to get off the dime and spend a few bucks. And it's got nothing to do with impact fees or anything. It's a matter of pride in their building. So impact fees will be what they will be. We're not going to solve that tonight, I don't believe. But if we want to improve downtown, we've got to figure out some way, somehow, to get some of these buildings fixed up.
Councilperson Hansen.
I was going to answer that same question, and just thinking it through. Rents are a lot higher in Bellingham, but they're a lot higher in Seattle than they are in Bellingham. And it's for exactly the same reason that rents are lower in Ferndale. We have not matured as a community as much as Bellingham has. Bellingham hasn't matured as much as a community as Seattle has. By maturity, I mean things like being able to work, play, and live in a very finite area in the same community. So the factors that go into it, good jobs, transportation system, ours is sketchy at best compared to what Bellingham has. How close is your nearest theater in Ferndale? It's in Bellingham. How close is the nearest theater if you live in the Bellingham Towers? It's across the street. So, and that's talking about a community that has matured. So when you're talking about the reason why rents are lower in Ferndale than they are in Bellingham is because this community has yet to mature. Now, bring in the good jobs, bring in the recreational activities, bring in good parks, bring in an improved transportation system, and you'll see the rents go up.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Watson.
Yeah, I have two. One for Councilmember Ingram, just maybe to clarify something, and one for Mr. Freeberg, since it's a relevant topic. Paul, you mentioned a shovel-ready, almost engineered project on Thornton. I'm struggling to listen carefully. If you clarify that, I didn't understand.
Well, we're paying currently for the engineering on the Thornton. With part of our transportation fees currently are going into that fund to pay for the engineering development work for the Thornton overcrossing. It's my understanding that it's substantially underway. Am I incorrect in that?
I wouldn't say substantial.
Okay. Well, then I stand corrected. It's underway.
Thank you. And then I just had a question, Mr. Freeberg, and I wanted to make, because I listened real carefully when he spoke earlier, which he spoke during concurrency, but I think he meant to speak during this. And, John, I think you said something about we don't know the cost of these projects or what the impact fee should be, but I think that's why we hired the consultants. I have a number here. $39 million would be the cost of the entire planned action area and $70 million citywide. I think those are the round numbers. And then so we're currently struggling with the impact fee right now. So I think there's been some work done, and we're trying to get close to know what those costs are. And perhaps you intended something else by your question or your comment. I just wanted to make sure.
Welcome again to Mr. Freeberg.
Thank you, John.
Those numbers are hypothetical, really.
Sure.
When you
bring up numbers like this, you should be able to produce some data to prove what this costs. It's no different building a house, it's no different buying a car or anything, or going to a restaurant. You want to should know the cost if it makes sense. But then it should be a cost benefit. What are you going to get for this? Let's say $22 million, whatever it is, okay? You get 2 minutes of traffic time saving. 2 minutes, that's what it says in his report. Now, $22 million for 2 minutes is pretty expensive. My suggestion, and I'm not going to sit up here and talk all night, so, is leave it like it is. Leave the lights. It don't cost any. The lights are fine. And take that $22 million that you're going to spend after, and it could be more. That's just for the roundabouts. That doesn't cost anything else behind it, or the buying of the right-of-way. One roundabout's 228 feet across. Does anyone know we got the right-of-way? Well, your staff said they did some little preliminary stuff and things like this. And they said, yeah, we're close, but how much is 228 feet of right-of-way? I don't know. I can't say. But someone should be able to produce some information and say, you know what, we got 240 feet of right-of-way. We can fit that. Do you know how much bigger those are than the Guide Meridian ones? They're 50 to 60 feet more on Main Street that the 17,000 cars go through compared to the Guide Meridian at Bellingham at I-5. You're talking 35 to 50,000 a day. So, you know, there's a lot of things in that report that's just, it's bogus. I don't believe it. And I think you should dig into it. Should ask more questions. I'm not up here to put roundabouts down or anything else down, but I don't think anybody knows. And prove it.
Mr. Freeberg, and also what you failed to mention is those are today's dollars. If we had the money today, not to mention 5, 10, or 15, or 20 years down the road, the cost of inflation, it's a real guess.
Well, I forgot to mention one thing. You spent $5 million 4 years ago out here. $5 million to make the street nice and wide and everything else. And now it's no good. I don't get it. Where's the planning? Take that money and put it at Thornton Road, and you'll help Dave Smith out, and you'll help the whole hill that you won't believe what would happen. But you go down here again, I'll tell you what, I don't, in 5 years, it's going to be, well, the bridge is the problem, and the four street lights in downtown is the problem. The Guide Meridian didn't have any restraints, and they only built four of them in 4.5 miles. See? So, you know, this is not an easy fix. I think you need to really, you know, do some research. And that's, I think there's, I wouldn't bet on it improving downtown any.
Thank you, John.
Thanks. Councilperson Watson.
Completely unrelated to Thornton. Do we want to talk about Thornton some more, or can I go somewhere else?
It's your floor.
Oh, much power. I guess we were talking about doing the rebates with a large-scale development where, you know, if they gave us so much in sales tax, we would give them some of their TIF money back. And we didn't agree to that, did we? That was just like chatting. Okay. Because I don't like that idea very much, just so you know. Just for the record. I just want to make sure that we hadn't, you know, unanimous consent accidentally made him think that we wanted to do that.
Well, on that vein, though, I'm sensitive, you know, traffic impact fees are sensitive. Mr. Robertson touched on it, is that sometimes we think of traffic impact fees and we think of those fees and we think, oh, it's that big, large, evil developer, and boy, we're going to stick it to them. But, you know, we have to remember that traffic impact fees affect all kinds of people in Ferndale. We had a person that wanted to do a dance studio, but her problem is that her whole class schedule was scheduled to come and go between 4 and 6. Now, traffic impact fees are scheduled between 4 and 6. So if you have, say, 40 dance students all having their mother drive them between 4 and 6, do the math. 40 times 2,300. A dance studio doesn't pencil out that way. When we had a large manufacturing firm look at us, and we said, you know, and then they were comparing us to Blaine. So, well, your adjustment is can you adjust your start times? Because having your host staff of 200 employees drive home from 4 to 6, well, that's a big number, 200. So don't always, I mean, it's easy to, I understand where John's going as we have these traffic things, but eventually someone has to pay for that. Eventually the consumer pays for everything, not the big developer. He passes it on to the consumer. I'll go to Councilperson Goodrich first.
My question is to staff. What are you looking at from this discussion tonight? What do you want from us?
Just what I was going to say.
You know, type of a thing. So, you know, we've been kind of all over the place.
I think our city administrator would love to answer that question.
I was just going to say, I have five items here that we could potentially get direction on tonight, but I'm going to say three of them are probably a little more important. And I'll go down really, if you're comfortable coming up with these decisions tonight, that would really help us, because that way, come March 5th, we'll bring you an ordinance that has those in it. Because if we just bring you an ordinance with blanks in it, we're going to be having the very discussion we're having tonight. Of course, one is the TIF amount, what you're comfortable with. Another one is one zone or two. Because if we just have one zone, then we just figure out what the appropriate TIF is. If we have two zones, you figure out what it should be within the plan action area and what it should be outside the plan action area. Those are really the two biggies. And then, I guess, moving down on the scale of importance, there's the rebate program or not for large sales tax-generating enterprises. This one here, I think I know the answer to, is whether we have a CPI adjustment, and I have a feeling that most of you would feel that it would be appropriate. We also need, potentially, if you do want to reduce the impact fee outside of the plan action, what percentage of Thornton are you willing to reduce down to reduce the impact fee? And I guess when we talk about the TIF amount, it really boils back to that $39 million versus the $24 million. Are you comfortable setting up a fee that will potentially fill the full $39 million gap and say we're not going to depend on state funding or not? And so really I think the state funding or not and the TIF amount kind of roll together, because obviously whatever number you land on for the TIF will drive the dollars, and either they'll be $39 million generated or there won't. And if there won't be, then obviously we're going to be looking to the state to fill the gap or someone else. So really, one zone or two, the TIF amount, rebate or not, CPI adjustment, and what percentage of Thornton, if you would like to reduce it, what you might be comfortable with.
Okay, and eventually we probably should go to the audience to see if anyone else wants to comment. Yeah. So I have Councilperson Olson with his hand up first, then I saw Watson, then Mutchler.
I think Yori's kind of figuring out the way to actually get an answer to these questions. As far as TIF amounts, personally, I was kind of leaning towards what John was saying. I mean, we paid all these money for all these consultants, and they tell us what the max is. So if we can justify that, why don't we do it? But having listened, I'm at the point where I would go with the recommended, and we have justification so we don't have to go through this all over again should we need to go up, or in the case, go down. But that's kind of that looks okay to me, because I don't know, when we were on the council, he didn't want us to raise them. City attorney, flying up here, until we had this study. So did this study just get concluded, or how did the fees get raised last year if this study was still gone?
We'd had a public hearing, we'd had a traffic town hall meeting, mm-hmm. and then we'd had consultants.
Yeah.
We finally listed the, according, you know, and Mr. Freeberg's correct, the approximate mm-hmm. estimated costs of traffic improvements.
Yeah, we did the work to come up with the $70 million, and based on that work, the council agreed to $2,300. Now we've done the work for the $39 million, and now we're back to that decision point.
Well, I would be in favor of going with the recommended and seeing which way it can be adjusted at a later time. Okay. Councilperson Hudson?
I'm comfortable with having more than one zone. For me, setting the fee should be based on how much it's going to cost to do mitigation. So if there's an area of the city where it's more expensive to do mitigation, we charge more there. If it's someplace in the city where maybe, but I guess that we can't do it that way. You can't just say that this is because we're right by the freeway and we're going to need roundabouts and washouts involved, it's more expensive. Because I still don't understand why the planned action area, because we've had this study, why they will have a different fee than people at Grandview and Slater, who will basically be building the same kind of buildings and having the same kind of effects. And so I don't understand why we don't have an I-5 corridor fee versus just planned action, and then Grandview and Slater are by themselves.
I think one of the reasons is the sheer number of trips. The planned action area, if built out with all the residential and all the office and all the hotel, will have so many more trips generated than Grandview. So you have a much bigger base to spread those costs amongst. So there's bigger costs, there's more trips, but it still ends up being, you know, right now, the only improvements we have up at Slater are based on the growth that the city has experienced historically.
Okay.
The growth that we've adopted for the planned action area is many times more than what we consider the natural growth of the city to be. So there's just this big concentration of increased development and therefore increased costs in the planned action area. Now, if we were to take Council Member Ingram's suggestion, if we were to do a planned action at Slater and a planned action up in Grandview, and again take a big area and say a whole bunch, we would probably end up with another big slug of projects up at Grandview and another big slug of projects down at Slater. But right now we've done the work to certainly quantify the amount of improvements on Main Street and quantify the intensity of the development and quantify the number of trips to be able to come up with these dollar amounts.
I think also a little bit of the difference between Grandview, Slater, and Main Street is Grandview and Slater's improvements tend to be operational kind of intersection improvements. The left-hand turning movements are the hardest ones. Whereas at Main Street, it's really volume because that's the street that everybody has in common. The roads simply, some of the roads simply cannot hold or will not be able to hold the amount of traffic that's on them. I think with Slater, it could hold a lot more traffic. So could Grandview. It's just getting that traffic onto those roadways efficiently. That's the biggest problem.
Well, I guess that's really my biggest issue is if it's so hard to develop at Main Street, and it's so expensive to develop at Main Street, why are we putting all of our effort to do large-scale retail at Main Street if it's the most expensive place we could be doing it?
Ding, 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 ding.
Well, it may or may not be the most expensive, but it's certainly the one area where the property owners came to us and said, we want to build.
I know they do.
Yeah.
But how does that affect what – I mean,
and they said, we want to build, and we're willing to pay for a study that will make building predictable and from a time standpoint, a shorter time frame.
I understand that.
So now, it could be that we might have folks up in Grandview or down at Slater come forward and say, you know, we want to build, too. Let's do another planned action. But while we have over the years zoned Slater and Grandview for large-scale commercial development in the hope that that is where they would go. The market has decided, i.e., the property owners and those developers have decided that, you know, we know it's zoned for it up in Grandview. We know it's zoned for it down at Slater, but we want to build on Main Street. So the market has told us that Main Street initially is where the action is in Ferndale.
Well, an amazing retail concept. They want to go where the people are.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that. And if that's where they want to build, but that's the most expensive place for us mitigation-wise. And so I expect them to pay their fair share. If they want to build and that's, if they think they have the most customers there, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure that they're going to pay their fair share because that's going to be the most difficult place for us as a city to mitigate the effects of it. And if people really want to build there, I understand that. I know we can't stop development. I just want to make sure that the people living on Trigg you know, or the people living, you know, up on the hill who maybe or may not even use what's going to be built are not going to have to pay hundreds of extra dollars every year so that we can build this roundabout. That's my only worry. I mean, I don't. If we're going to have development, that's fine. I just want to make sure everybody's paying their fair share.
Okay, I have Councilperson Mutchler, Goodrich, and then to Zimmerman.
So I think there's a consensus, but I want to say it so that there's not someone will speak up, that we do have two zones that seem to be where outside the plan action and.
I'm not happy, but
I guess I'd add two zone makes sense if there's a differential in the fee. Yeah. If we're talking $100 or $200 between the two zones, then it would make, and this is really comes from our consultant, it makes a lot more sense to have one zone because it's so much easier to administer. So assuming that you feel like there's a fee in the plan action area that is reasonably higher than the fee outside the plan action area, then a two-zone approach makes sense.
And that's where I'm at. And if we do that, it would be my preference, if we can do this, that the outside area of the plan action, outside the plan action area, that we keep it at $2,300 and step it up each year to the target, whatever the target is, not to make the big leap because we just made a change this last year. Can we do something like that? So I'm looking here, like maybe the target's 28 or maybe it's 25. Add 100 a year until we get to the target, something like that. I'd be comfortable with that.
CPI though, right?
Well, what we could do is we could have, let's say we started off at 23 and our goal was 28. We could write the ordinance such that there is a $100 hard increase plus CPI on an annual basis. So that way, because in 5 years, let's say we're at 23, we need to get to we're at 23 and we need
Since
to get to 28.
We spent a lot of time getting to that $2,300, right. Not too many months ago. I mean, that was...
Yeah, well, so that would be a three-year phase-in from 23 to 28.
Is the recommended for the outside is only $146 difference. It's $146 more than it is $2,486.
Okay, getting back on track here.
Like herding cats.
Are you done with that train of thought, Councilperson Mutchler, or
that particular train of thought? I am done.
Okay, Councilperson Goodrich.
I may be the lone voice in this, but I personally am not in favor of raising the impact fees, especially in the planned action area. Seeing we did such a major increase in those fees last year, granted if you're building a house on the hill, the fee did go down, but it was a major increase in the fees in that area last year. And so I cannot support it and turn around a couple of months later and raise the fees again. And I also like I thank Mr. Freeberg for coming tonight and talking about the Thornton aspect. I've always thought of Thornton as that's something we need to do, but I didn't look at it like he presented it tonight. I thought that was an interesting thing. Would we be better off to spend our money and build Thornton first before we thought about building any roundabouts because of what impact that could have on Main Street? We may not have to build roundabouts if Thornton's built because it may pull enough cars off to offset the new cars coming in. If you get a bunch of people going off on the portal, then that frees up Main Street. And so without really knowing what that is going to be and things like that, then, I can't support raising the fee until I think we really look at that as maybe should be our primary option, is build Thornton and then look at the roundabouts It's like Second Avenue. I don't know if we've ever gotten an official report back saying, well, what impact did the Second Avenue have on Main Street? We've talked about, well, we'll do, traffic studies, we'll do, crunch numbers. But I know at one time there was a comment made, well, let's see what impact the new Second Avenue has on Main Street. Well, has it? We've spent all that money and built it, but we've never heard, was it worth our money or not? And so for all those reasons, I just cannot support anything more increases at this time until we get some other answers from where we are today and what would Thornton really do to Main Street if it was finished.
Zimmerman?
Again, thank you, Mr. Freeberg, for coming over, and it proves the point. Now that you've moved out of town, you are an expert because you live more than 30 years of time. So, good job. Yeah, thanks for bringing 40 years of perspective to this argument. I agree very wholeheartedly with fellow council person Kathy that what we're shooting for here is real difficult. That the concept that you brought, talking about creating a market, what's unique about it is that we're also gouging away at that market because we are, as soon as we put in the crossing for Thornton, guess what? Now we have not forced everyone to come through the funnel and pass those retailers. So in certain ways, we are, like you said, they, no matter, even though the impact fees are cheaper here, they want to be here because it's traffic count that drives those numbers of the science of it. And also to mention about Sammamish, is that they're unique, like Ferndale, is that the city and growth has built out to them. And as Paul said, if you go up and down I-5, guess what? We're the last vacant space where everyone's going to pop up. So I'm inclined to, I like the two sections, keeping that the top of the hill stuff lower, then also to have things a little on the higher side because we can negotiate with either the Eagle impact fees or in-kind or let them do some of work themselves on their project. There's a lot of negotiation room if you start high, but if you come in low, we'll be back where we were from the 14 years of not raising any impact fees for future councils. So I think we're headed in the right direction. I think we can get something together here. But, again, thank you, Mr. Freeberg, for coming through and really
Council
putting this.
Councilman Watson, and then back to Goodrich. And then I think Mr. Chumachler said he's third.
I guess my question is related. We're talking about Thornton a lot now, but the rules-wise, if we take TIF money from people who are building on Main in the planned action area, so part of that money can be used to build Thornton. Is that correct? Okay. So I guess if you really do want to build Thornton, don't you want to get some money? Because if we leave the fees the same, where's that extra money to build Thornton? Thornton's only going to get more expensive. Every year goes by, it gets more expensive to build. So if we do want to build Thornton, I'd rather that we did as much of it as possible through impact fees rather than asking, once again, the people in Ferndale to pay more money for roads.
That's an interesting discussion because you need the money to build Thornton.
Yeah.
So you need more development to come in to take your glass so your glass is full enough to pay for Thornton. But if you go to a certain level and nothing goes in the glass, and you still need Thornton because the traffic's still there, but you don't have any money to pay for it. So.
I don't want to sell my soul for Thornton. I've
said this before. This is one of the tougher decisions that council is ever going to make. We have Councilperson Goodrich, Mutchler, and then to Ingram.
Just one other thought on the Thornton aspect that Councilmember Zimmerman sparked in me is if we have Thornton, we got a lot of land over there that's zoned for businesses and things to where now that land becomes attractive for people to build, and you're talking again I-5 frontage. So you could pull people off off a portal and have I-5 frontage right there between the roundabout and the railroad tracks. I don't know how many acres are in there, but I think there's a whole bunch of land there. You also have railroad access possibly for a business that, you know, there it opens all that up for development that currently really isn't developable right now because there's no real reason to do it. So there's additional advantages. And I thought part of the Thornton was included in the $2,300 of impact fee we already did. So, so there's, you know.
37%.
Yeah. So that's all we can charge of it, isn't it?
No, you specifically reduced the fee down to $2,300 by reducing the amount you were charging to Thornton.
But isn't there a certain percentage, though, we can only charge from of Thornton project out of impact fees to begin with?
There was, and then we reduced it down below that.
So we could get what?
Thank you. Nobody on council wants to raise impact fee. I really don't think we do, but I remember asking the question early on in this thing, if we kept the impact fee across the board, across the city in all areas at $2,300, it would cover things. It would cover stuff being built and impacts. but it comes out of sales tax. It comes out of the sales tax of the new retail, which is, if that's what you want, the new retail and the streets. But there's not, my understanding, I want staff and maybe Burke to correct me, there's not a lot of extra money after that for other things that city may want to do with that money. You sort of barely break even, it's my impression, if you leave it at $20,000. I also think that the plan action area, that's such a significant impacting area that it justifies treating that a little bit differently. And as I mentioned earlier, I'd like to keep outside, at least in the first year, the same amount. So I'd like a response from staff. Basically, if we follow Councilmember Goodrich's idea and state at $2,300, what does it do for the city or not do for the city? Because I'd love to keep it at $2,300. I'm really comfortable with that, but what are the implications to the city if we do that?
Well,
assuming development?
Yeah, assuming that development comes, it simply means that there's a bigger gap between the cost of the necessary improvements and what we're going to collect through transportation impact fees. And then the question becomes,
and the gap comes out of the sales.
How much the sales tax? And if you, in my report, I put together a scenario where we would use TIF sales tax and TBD sales tax, and only those three revenue sources, which would give us a pack a little bit more than the $39 million, which leaves property tax and utility tax and REIT and those other revenues free for other city expenditures. What I was trying to do in my report was tie those revenues that I felt were more directly related to transportation, the TIF, the sales tax, the TBD sales tax, to the traffic improvements while leaving the rest of that revenue flow that Burke has so expertly given us for other city operations. The thinking being is that if we can cover ourselves in TIP, sales tax, TBD, then we've got that other cash flow to take care of police and parks and whatever else.
But that's if we raise them.
Right, and that's assuming the 4,200.
Yeah, because I'd like to support Councilmember Goodrich. I mean, I'd like to leave here at $20,000, but I know it's going to be painful somewhere down the road and maybe rather quickly.
And if you remember, look back on my report, assuming that there was a dial back of $300 for Thornton, the rest of the city would be $2,486, which is awfully close to $2,300. I mean, probably enough to really not make a big difference,
perhaps,
for most, if not every, development outside of the city. I mean, you know, $186 an extra trip is really minuscule when you're talking about $2,300 to $2,486.
Okay, Councilman Ingerman line, then Goodrich, and then Olson.
Yeah, I kind of tend to support Councilman Olson's feelings with being quite comfortable with the recommended, staff recommended impact fees. I know that we've raised fees quite a bit, I guess quite a bit, lowered some in other places. It's $187 difference between the $23.23 we're charging now for a single family residence and the $25.10. That's really not going to kill any housing. And when it comes to developing the area over at the end along 2nd Avenue and all the way down towards the roundabout, when we complete the Thornton flyover, the same real estate agent that I was talking to about downtown said that's a ticking time bomb. As soon as that Thornton overcrossing is done, that area, the entire thing, is going to be bulldozed and it will explode. Because he has people lined up wanting to know, how much is it going to cost me to buy up, you know, 10 houses? How much is it going to take me to buy up that whole block over there? What's it going to cost? When are they going to do it? So you're 100% correct. When that time comes that we build Thornton overcrossing, you're 100% correct. That area is just going to explode in retail development because there's retailers out there that know you're not coming downtown anymore. If you live up on the hill, you're gonna take 262 or excuse me 263, and you're gonna zip over there and you're gonna go up the hill. So they're gonna put every kind of thing you can imagine. There'll probably be a new grocery store over there. There'll probably be all kinds of stuff over there. Because they're going to be wanting to trap that retail market that's going up the hill and no longer coming down Main Street. So it's really going to come out fast.
customers in Goodrich and then Olson.
My question is to probably the Transpo. Have you looked at a Thornton or any estimates of what Thornton finished today would do to Main Street traffic? And if we did a Thornton first, do we even need to consider the roundabouts and stuff on Main Street?
Well, we didn't look at it constructing it in today's scenario, but it was our no-action alternative and was the plan was identified in the original transportation element that we assisted with through January 2011. So that was our baseline is we're assuming that Thornton would be complete at that stage, and then you put in the planned action development. So any traffic that's already shifted back up to Thornton now gets replaced with additional growth in the basically opened up some more room for development within the Main Street corridor as far as traffic goes. That necessitated with the moderate alternative under the planned action necessitated in order to maintain the level of service standards, types of improvements that are identified in the EIS. So, yes, essentially the Thornton extension was the assumed complete in our baseline analysis.
Okay, I thought it was just the opposite, that Thornton was something, out there that we would like to do, but, these are the things we have to do because we don't have a Thornton.
No, because council a year ago basically said Thornton is a high priority, should be in the plan. And so we assume that, working with staff, that was our baseline going into the planned action analysis.
Did you ever do an actual analyzation on traffic? Because I can see the council's concern about traffic impact fee level, but at times you frustrate me because you're locked into C rather than D, but you don't want to raise the traffic impact. Which they're very interrelated.
Well, they're interrelated, but as we identified, especially under the roundabout, under either roundabout or signal options, the difference in total cost for the capital improvement between C and D was in the range of $2 to $3 million. So out of the $109 million or whatever we've been talking about, that's a pretty small effect. So it's not going to have a big impact from a dollar amount. It's more about a timing issue, such as concurrency, is that you won't need these improvements as soon, so maybe you can spread those out over a longer time period. Instead of needing them in 15 years, you might not need them for 20 years.
Yeah. I just add, too, that Thornton will probably buy us some time, but when it comes to traffic on Main Street, the issue is not the 12,000 people who live in Ferndale. It's the 100,000 people who live in Bellingham, Linden, Blaine, out in Simiamu, as well as Ferndale. That's the market that's going to be drawn.
And the lower mainland of Canada.
Lower mainland of Canada. Okay. So,
Councilperson Olson has the floor, then Watson.
Two things. Kathy and I weren't on the council at the time, but for the ones that keep saying that they don't like these fees, you paid these guys, you authorized it, paid them thousands of dollars to come up with these scientific methods of determining fees, and they give you an answer, and you don't like it. What a waste of time.
Who doesn't like
it? Why did we do it? It's just to whoever's feeling that they don't want to. The second thing is, I keep hearing we raised these fees so high to $2,300 when, in fact, we haven't. Isn't it we didn't raise traffic these fees for, 14 years? 14 years. That's absurd. So how can you sit there and say that we're skyrocketed these fees? Well, we didn't do a damn thing with them for 14 years. I can't understand that logic. Maybe somebody can help me.
It's a conservative. Hey.
Pardon?
It's a conservative. I don't know. I don't think we're going to get a response back.
Probably not. It's a rhetorical question.
Yeah. Councilperson Watson.
For the sake of time, do we want to see if anyone in the audience wants to add something? The kids need to go at 8.
Yeah.
And then maybe we could end up showing hands, like who wants the one zone, who wants the zone.
Well, do you want to open up for some
always
audience comments? And then, students, we let you go at 8.
Last chance.
Yes, and we'll do the comments time, so people have to be precise.
Because we're just talking.
And if you've already talked, you've already talked.
Oh, is that fair?
What happened in the last? Well, we have a like a record going for attorneys reaching the time factor, so I'm not as worried as before.
Well, and this is not the public This is not the public hearing. That's coming up next. This is not binding vote or anything like that.
So, audience, we didn't do a list for this, but anyone who would like to speak on this subject, I see one hand already, so you're first. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm Paul Kazuki. I'm with the Ferndale Development Group. You're working on the southeast quadrant of the main accident. And my interest is, of the five items that Mr. Young put on the board, only one. The rest of it, the council is having a very healthy discussion, and you're going to make the right decision. That's the one zone versus two zones. There have been many arguments offered tonight on the issue of one zone versus two zone. One of them was that there are some improvements that are going to be required as part of the future environmental impact statements for other interchanges for future projects. Well, I submit that those improvements have already been included as impacts of the Plan Action EIS. For instance, there are four improvements listed in the Slater Road area that are part of the impacts of the Plan Action EIS. I refer you to Figure 3.3-2, Table 3.3-14, and Appendix D10.
Are you in the Planned Action EIS, sir?
Pardon?
Are you reading the Planned Action EIS?
Yes. That shows the improvements that are outside of the plan action area. Those improvements have been considered. So if you think that an EIS is going to require, I wonder what would have happened if the plan action was done for Grandview or Slater Road. there would be impact definitely on Main Street and Action, and you would require improvements on that one. So I don't really agree with that argument. There are, I have about three pages of notes on that. I'm trying to be as brief as I can. How do we know with the two zones that the plan action is going to have more impact than development in another interchange? As the council member mentioned, all the interchanges are going to be developed eventually. The question is going to be which one. Argument was given that plan action is ahead of the game. It is because there's a plan action EIS, it's 1 year, it's going to take 1 year versus 2 years. Well, we have offered that argument to retailers. Corporate officials don't think about that. That is not a good selling point from our point of view, from a developer's point of view. They're looking at the dollar, they're looking at the location. Location is the most important part of it. Right now, everybody is looking at locations that are closer to Bellingham. That's the perception they have. They want to be close to Bellingham. So if you choose two different zones, you're giving an unfair advantage to the other properties that are zoned and ready to go. May I make one more point, Mayor?
Quickly.
My favorite method of improvements by a municipality is a tax increment financing. Unfortunately, that's done partially. And the method that Mr. Burnett mentioned is returning part of the fees. That's similar to tax increment financing. You've talked about the sales tax. You've talked about impact fees for the property taxes. Tax increment financing addresses the value increase of the properties and therefore the property tax increase. That's how they pay for the bonds. Unfortunately, we don't have that available all over the place, and that is the returning part of the fee is basically similar to that method. Okay. Thank you for your
time. Thank you. I'll take one more person from the audience before we will set the high school thing. So I saw your hand up first. If there's a high school student, I'm going to squeeze you in then too.
Oh, yeah. My name is Annie Cox. I live at 5650 Corral
Court in Ferndale. I've heard a lot of talk about a lot of things in this discussion, but one thing I haven't heard very much about except from Councilman Hansen was about the impact on the citizens. And so I would kind of like to say a few words as a citizen of the city about what I would like you to consider. I've lived here in Ferndale for 8 years, and my utility bills from the city of Ferndale have gone up probably 50% in that time. And that's a hardship on a person like myself living on a fixed income. I'm not poor, but we have a lot of poor people in the city. And if you don't put impact fees up high enough so that you don't have to come out to us later and say, gimme, we need this money because now we got to do all these things we didn't do before, that's going to really hurt a lot of your citizens. I realize it's a real balancing act, trying to find the right place to put that fee. But leaving it where it is, I'm sorry, I just disagree with you violently about that, because I think you and I are going to pay for it later. And we'll pay for it in our property taxes and in everything else that the city can raise on us. And so really try to give some thought to your citizens as well as your developers. I'm very in favor of growth. I'd love to shop here in Ferndale, but I don't want to have to pay for it and let the developers and the big stores off. So that's it.
Thank you. High school student, you had your hand up. I'm going to pull you forward.
My name is Claire Fallis, and I go to Ferndale High School. I would just like to thank Mel Hansen for what he said about maturing our community. I think it's really great. And from a teen's perspective, it'd be nice to have somewhere to hang out on Friday nights, aside from Bellingham or at home or at your friend's house. So, I mean, there are places to go shopping. We have, like, new places in the Ferndale Station area. But if we'd also, we have Boys and Girls Club, but I feel like that's more of a younger generation. And it'd be nice to have somewhere for the teens to hang out. And if we do go with something like that, I think it'd be really fun for, I know how they were raising money for the Boys and Girls Club, and then once we raise the money for the teens' place, it'd be cool to have the teens help and build it, because it would be like, it would make us together, and we'd be proud of it, you know, as well as we'd have some cool walls where I know there's like artistic teens out there who like to decorate sometimes on the bridge. But it'd be nice to incorporate the kids in as far as how we decorate the building, if that was an option for you guys. So, I mean, and in that we could have, this might be very expensive, but it'd be cool to have a type of a small theater. So we'd have movie viewings maybe on Friday nights or something once a week. But I don't know. That's up to you guys. So.
Great. Okay, questions for you.
It's really, really nice to hear you say that. The reason I'm going to tell you that is because I was 1,400 miles away this last week talking to a young lady about your age and a young man about the same age. And I said, what is the favorite place in town where you guys hang out? And I was floored by the answer. Because the answer was, the mall. It's got everything. We can shop. We can go to the food court. We can go to the movies. And it never struck me. A mall? I was thinking skating rinks, you know, and all these. The mall. So
this generation didn't have malls.
No, my generation definitely didn't have malls. I guarantee you that. But it's so nice to hear you say that. A place to hang out is a great idea.
And, I mean, the mall is a good idea, but the reason I object to that is because it would be nice to have somewhere you can make things, like in that room of a building to have, like, a pottery place or just an art place or a building place or something like
that. They were talking
that.
About that for the teen center at the Boys and Girls Club. Did that fall through? Because I know Molly down there pretty well. And
they don't have as much at the teen center.
But they were going to do a pottery. They were going to do a pottery.
No, but she's correct. They've kind of lost that teen generation.
Yeah.
Zimmerman?
Yeah. Claire, thank you for speaking. You did a wonderful job of expressing yourself. Now, what, if I may ask, what grade are you in? Are you a senior? Are you going to be gone next year?
I'm a junior.
Okay, so you can be part of this process as it moves along.
Yeah, I'd really like to be, yeah.
Excellent. We're good. Good job.
Great.
Thank you
very much. Okay, I'm going to take a five-minute break. Yeah. So 5 minutes adjournment. We'll get the students out of here so you can come do your homework. So you line up here and we'll sign all your sheets.
Somebody must have got the word, or Scott got the word.
Oh, we're going to make the decision. Well, both at Grandview and Slater, it was the on-off. Now, for Slater, you better believe that there's going to be a whole lot more improvements on the table than what we're talking about.
Oh, you know, that's not our main
It turns out that he's more of a flipper. He gets a piece of property invested and then sells it to somebody who's a developer.
Sure.
But they're still working on their issue. And when it is,
we usually don't send out the recommendations here. I was wondering if there was a question on it.
That's right down there. This is the Pioneer Plaza area, and here's Axton. They're like, it was an important piece of it. And they were trying to pull that in because it really doesn't make a lot of
sense. Would you be able to point out your show that
all the way
The 47% is 37% by 37, which is A, B, and C. A and B is going to cost 20, and we're going to collect 18. So we're collecting 90% of A and B. So if we keep that $300, we may be instead of 90, we may be at 82.
They were here at the last meeting. When you were gone, they were here at the last one with their kids.
Option 1, they raised 17 million, option 2, still 17, 39, 50, so it's a little bit of a difference. But you go across option 1, you get 15, option 2, you get 18. So option 2, you get more of dollars in the financial, which makes sense.
I think it's not.
All right, let's wander back there.
voted on the weekend. They were never considered. Some we can choose right. Some we can, you know.
She made her own back.
I saw the resignation. Okay, let's go down.
Okay, we're back in session. Councilperson Mutchler, you had a statement?
Yeah, I just had a question of staff. I didn't think of this quick enough, but Mr. Pazuki was talking earlier about his concerns about a two-zone TIF area. My question was, we weren't given any numbers that would reflect that approach. And I'm just curious if staff or Burke or Transpo could help us if we were to go up the one zone. What would that mean in terms of amounts?
It's on there.
Is it on there somewhere?
Yeah, it's on that chart.
It's about 3,500.
Where do you read that?
It's on this, which we didn't. Burke has actually done, and we unfortunately excluded this from your packets. What it did was it took two options. One option is the one we're talking about right now with a 4,200, 2,700.
Right.
And the other one was, and I believe it was actually, I think, in the staff report, it was 3,500 and 3,300. So they're very similar inside and outside the planned action. In a 35-33 scenario, inside and outside, in fact, both option one and option two generate the same dollars. They still generate about $33 million over time.
Okay.
It's just a question, and I think this makes sense without even looking at this. The option two, where you have the 4,200 and the 2,700,
mm-hmm.
as you would expect, within the planned action area, more revenue is generated for planned action improvements.
Right.
But it really, it's fairly similar between the two. We're talking a couple million dollars, and you know, Morgan, if I'm off base here, it's a couple million dollars either way. Between the two options, but it's just a question of where the revenue is generated. For the greater differential fee, more revenue is generated within the planned action for the planned action stuff. And when you spread it out a little more evenly, again,
then you would be generating more revenue outside the planned action for the planned action, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And okay. And most of the outside of the planned action, am I incorrect in saying most of it is residential. I mean, that's really what's going on right now. Unless somebody comes in and...
You have two other freeways.
Yeah, we have Grandview, we have Slater, we have all the industrial commercial lands. There's considerable amount.
Which should be given incentive because they're outside of that high traffic impact area. That adds to the quality of life. Distracting.
For not to draw your attention to it right now, but something to look at, we knew that the transportation element was going to come in handy in one way tonight. So on page 74, there's a breakdown of the relative increases in traffic that we'd expect all throughout the city over the next 20 years. And it gives you an idea
if you can read it.
Of a lot of different places.
Unfortunately, you can't really read
it. Mr. Pazuki's concern as representing one of the property owners is that, and I think Councilmember Watson was sharing this earlier, is giving an appearance of an advantage to those other areas. And we were told that it was time that we can save a year or two, whatever it is, that may not be that helpful. And so is there an argument to be made, and Councilmember Watson, I think, was suggesting that we include rather soon the Grandview and the Slater similarly to the plan action area.
And this in terms of the study? Or?
No, in terms of fees. In terms of fees.
Can I ask a question that might clarify that for you guys? There's no current specifically identified mitigation measures for those two interchanges to help provide that type of cost.
Mr. Pazuki was correct that the mitigations that we identified, the transportation improvements, aren't just within the planned action area, that there are some down at Slater, that there's some in various other places of the city. So that I guess, you know, would be a good question.
Correct. There are – basically, we started with the no-action alternative, what was in the transportation element before. That was a given. There were spot improvements throughout the city. the biggest park that was under the impact fee, the $2,300 impact fee, was Thornton. There was also some improvements to the Main Street interchange, the widening of that. So a portion of that cost was included. And then traffic signals, turn lanes, other types of improvements were part of that. When we did the planned action, we got to the moderate alternative. Traffic doesn't stay within the planned action area. It spreads out. Some of it goes down to the Slater Road corridor. Furthermore, there was additional development in the Whatcom Council of Governments forecast south of Slater that was not in the previous transportation element. So that was added in. It's outside the city in here. So there's additional growth in there. Would it cover a whole bunch of new development in the Slater Road corridor beyond what was initially identified by the city? Probably not to the same degree that if, as we added in for the planned action, the moderate alternative in the planned action in Main Street, if we took that same down in Slater, we'd have significantly additional improvements than we've got in the plan right now. That would raise the improvement costs as well as probably impact fees in those areas. So it's kind of apples and oranges going on right now. We specifically took, another million square feet or so of development, put it around Main Street and said, what are the impacts? Now, if we did that same in Slater or Grandview, we'd end up with additional improvements that aren't in the plan right now. So yet, $109 million might be $159 million. That hasn't been done. That's a lot of growth to absorb if you're going to have development going in, that level of development going in at all your major interchanges within that kind of time period. It may eventually happen, but I think you need to focus in on getting part of it going forward, seeing how it works before you just jump in and say, hey, everything, let's do the same for everywhere, because you really don't, the property owners or the development plans aren't all set. Now, if there's more development that came in at Grandview or Slater, such as the Lummi Tribe or others, and you had more information, then it's probably worth looking at it in a different light. But right now it's all more conjecture. You're not talking to the specific property owners about what their ideas are.
Okay. I'll go to Councilor Ingram. Councilor Member, we haven't basically told the audience they're done commenting yet, so maybe other people want to comment. Councilor Ingram?
A little over 4 years ago when I was doorbelling in my first campaign to be on this city council, one of my points was growth pays for growth. And everybody I talked to who opened their door agreed that growth pays for growth. So whether you are a builder building single-family homes or multifamily homes anywhere around Ferndale city limits, or whether you're Joe Big Box coming in to build a big box store, you need to pay your fair share. And I think that the closest we come is the staff recommended monies here and on this table. Growth has to pay for growth, whether it's a single zone or double zone, it's got to pay for it. I personally I lean toward the two zone. I just think it's a little more equitable that the developer who's building a house up here on the hill, like maybe John, shouldn't have to pay the same fees that the people that are coming in with a big box store are paying downtown. Those kids are making way too much noise.
We have an astronaut out there. Don't worry about it.
It's going to be quiet. It's going to be quiet now.
It's going to be quiet now.
Wendy has spoken.
Teacher mode. I like that.
Okay, so you want to comment before we go back to the audience?
Just as per Councilmember Ingram's comment, one of the parts that interrelates with the amount that council is comfortable with and the growth pays for growth is Thornton and how much of that to pay, where a lot of the people who would benefit most by Thornton are already living here, and it's not growth, it's existing. So one of the options, at least in that staff recommendation, is to actually reduce the amount that the city would be asking development to fund Thornton with the expectation that the existing community would fund a larger share possibly through a bond.
Right, exactly. I would love to prove the delightful gentleman. I can't remember his name. He was here and spoke to the council about a year and a half ago, and he was the, I think, general manager of Sampson Rope. He said, that thing's never going to get built in my lifetime. I want to prove him wrong. I'd love to see that.
Councilperson Olson?
I think it's time that we progress grapes, either by his famous recipe card method or whatever.
Well, let's finish up audience participation, and then we'll roll in to see if there's some action. So anyone from the audience would still like to speak?
He's already spoken.
He hasn't spoken, so he gets ahead of you.
My name is Brad Lincoln. I work for Gibson Traffic Consultants. We've worked here in the city and around most of, probably if not all of, Washington. The one thing I agree with, growth needs to pay for growth. The important part of that is, what are the fees? Is there one fee for the entire area? Are there two fees? And there's two things that have struck me. One is, Transport did a great job on the report. So if I say anything that seems otherwise, that's not the case. But what they analyzed is developments in the PA, in the planned action area. They didn't just analyze the planned action area, and specifically Slater Road and the improvements down there. And two, the fact that funds generated from development in the planned action area wouldn't just fund improvements in the planned action area. They could help fund Thornton. And I think both of those lead to the fact that having one mitigation fee for the entire city is appropriate, as opposed to having one for development outside the planned action and one for development inside the planned action. I understand that increasing that fee twice in a short period can be hard to take, but I think that the city as a whole benefits from Main Street. Thornton Road could lead to trips not using Main Street, but the entire city can benefit from those improvements from Main Street. That could become Ferndale's identity.
Quick question. Do you have any clients in the city right now? Are you working with anyone in particular?
I've been contacted about someone in the city, but I have nothing beyond that. So, no, right now I'm not working. I've worked with Mr. Pizzuki, and so let me take that back. Yes, I've worked with Mr. Pizzuki okay. about reviewing this. My comments are not based on what Mr. Pizzuki would like, but just on my own feelings on how this on the one zone versus two zone mitigation fee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Robertson, you had your hand up. Remember that you're just gloriously doing really well by limiting yourself to 3 minutes.
Thank you again for the opportunity. I'd like to provide more input. Did you know that if you use the $4,200 as a fee and we calculate out a big box store, your fee is over twenty-five percent of the land value. Did you know that? We're not talking about a minor little additor here. So big development may be able to absorb that. But I can tell you that the decision time for these is not, well, we can amend it and amend it. What happened is people came in when you had your TIFs 2 years ago, made decisions, spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, and now are pulling back because of the decisions you're making. The FTC project has been stopped. It took us a long time to get the permits. We've been working with the city since 1995 to get there. It is now dead. It cannot work with the TIFs you're talking about. Other properties are still moving ahead, but I know that the retail that's needed to develop the golf course into soccer fields will not work at this TIF level. It's not the big ones that this kills. It's your local people here that want to open up the dance studio, that want to open up the Quiznos. Those can't pay the TIFs. So when you say development should pay for development, well, part of the problem is, when you ask about the WashDOT money, the problem is our legislators. The reason no overpasses have been fixed in Whatcom County is because we don't have any legislators who can do anything. This isn't something this community should pay for, and I'll tell you in advance, if you put money in your plan to pay for that overpass, the state will never, ever consider paying it themselves. They say, oh, that's already taken care of. We propose to the city and would recommend, again, put in seed money to develop the politics to get somebody else to pay for it. But that's not something Ferndale should pay for. We have worked together. There's a reason why I come to all these meetings. I read all the reports and work so closely with Greg and Yuri, and I enjoy working with them. It's not because my clients are come here, take the money, and leave. They've been here a very long time. They want to stay here a very long time, and we're working with the city. Please listen to us. TIFs at this level will mean your city does not mature, at least not in our time period. I will continue to work with you, but I can't say enough times. The TIFs have a huge impact. It's a quarter of the land value, which 2 years ago was probably less than 2%. I really appreciate all the effort, especially Mr. Young and Mr. Burnett are putting into it, and I continue to help.
Questions for Mr. Robinson? Councilperson Watson?
If we don't do the TIFs, how will we pay for the traffic mitigation?
There's no question you have to pay for that. You have to have the TIFs. But before you do it is, look back a year ago. You went from a C to a D. I have to respectfully disagree that it's not $2 million. When you move from one level of service to another, it's a significant impact. It depends how you cook the books that were on how you measure the LOS, but you have to ask, if we're dropping $18 to $25 million in roundabouts and you measure LOS from the 4th Street out to the freeway, it all stops at the railroad bridge. You've got to have the TIFs, but you've got to figure out the most efficient way to do it. And then the better question is, are the numbers accurate? As Mr. Freeberg was saying, we have submitted copious comments to identify that there is no concept of what, relative to what those roundabouts will cost, what's been provided to you. They started off at $300,000 to $400,000. They've moved up significantly. Mr. Slagle provided the information. Other roundabouts have shown they cost significantly more. So what we'd say at this point is, yes, you have to adopt TIFs. Yes, you have to do it now because you're looking at potentially, maybe, some development right away. But as far as how much it should be, if you put it at this level, the question is, you will be delaying. Is that something your citizens want? Not sure.
Councilperson Mutcher and Councilperson Ingram.
Mr. Robinson, what would be the threshold?
That's a very good question. I think, how many times have we asked that question back and forth?
We've met with we started off, a year and more ago with the property owners in the room. And that's the very first question I asked. I said, now, unless you tell me what's the most you can bear, we're going to rely on our consultants to tell us what that amount is. And every meeting we have with the property owners, I keep asking them, I go, you know my cards. You know how much. This is an open discussion as to one zone, two zone, 4,200, 2,300, you know, sales tax, TBD. I go, you know everything the city's doing, but you're keeping your cards close right here. Unless you show me some of your cards, I have no alternative but to go with the experts that we hire. And so if he'll tell you, congratulations, because I've been asking for a year and a half.
And as Mr. Taylor recognizes, the first time we heard of TIFs, how much they'd be, was 2 weeks ago. So what we have is, you know, it's a chicken and egg question. Well, how much can you pay? And then the question is, well, what do you want? If you want my landowners to just bring in corporate big box stores, it's a heck of a lot more. If you want my smaller property owners, because, frankly, I represent a number of people that own the property around 2nd Street, they'll bring in local retailers. Those are two different questions. Those are two different answers. If it's a big box retailer, and I don't know because we're not building it out, they may be able to take $3,200, $3,200. But I can tell you right now, no one paying the rents in Ferndale Station could eat that. Because what happens is when they come in and they sign a lease, it is in their CAM charge. I've done it. You just incorporate into that's the common area maintenance fee. I just recoup the TIFs on the lease. And the difficulty is Ferndale, for a number of reasons, can't push the lease rates that you can in Bellingham. And interestingly, Bellingham can't push the lease rates that Fairhaven can. So it's very specific. So if you're saying how much can a big box retailer, maybe $3,200, how much can Quiznos, how much can the dance studio? If you want a local athletic facility that I think you desperately need, probably tennis courts more than anything, not a chance. So that's the question you have to ask is, it depends upon the type of development you want. And can we tell you? No, because, well, if it's, I don't know, you've got the school fees, the sewer fees, the water fees, we have to look at critical areas, we have to look at this. When you total it up, you're looking at usually governmental fees between 20 to 45% of the land value. And that is, and then on the other side is making the market, is there's no money to finance. So right now, I would say big box, $3,200. Because I can tell you that in my discussions with our potential buyer, we're getting serious pushback on the price. But on the other property where we don't have a potential buyer, the project's dead. We can't make it because there isn't one big retailer that could push the whole project. If we look around and say we make one 50 to 80,000 square foot pad, we need then six or seven other 5,000 to 10,000, and we look around Ferndale and go, they can't push the rents. So can the local people pay $2,300? Not today, no. I don't think you'll see a project come through now with a small retailer at a $2,300 TIF. Financing may change that in the future, but that's why it's such a complicated question. Today, no. 2-3 years, FDIC lightens up, might be able to. Only if the rents pick up.
I had other councilpersons with hands up. Councilperson Ingram and then Watson.
Mine's for staff.
Okay.
Well, you said something that confused me. Are you under the impression that the Thornton Overcrossing is a state project? Because it's not even close. And you said that we shouldn't be putting money into that. We should be putting seed money out to get somebody else to pay for it as if it was a state project?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Ingram. I heard the mayor. There's no overpass at Thornton. That will never be built.
No, it will never.
Right. So that, what I said is the overpass. If and we've talked about this at length. How are you – really, the nut of this is how do you get over I-5 at Main Street and how do you get over the river? That's because LOS is from the freeway to 4th Street. If you've got a pinch at 2 points, who cares what's in the middle? Our position is, and it always has been, if we put in – we, the city, puts into the TIF that we're going to pay 70% of the Main Street overpass, the state will look at that and say, gosh, we never have to pay that portion of it. You'll never get it out of the state. Instead, incorporate into your TIF a set-aside that says out of every 100 bucks you get, 15 goes to pay for the engineering, pay for the lobbying, pay for the grant process so that we never tell the state we're going to pay for it. Because eventually, we hope we get the legislators to go to Olympia and get us the money. But no, it wouldn't be. There's no overpass at Thornton, at least. I don't see one. Thank you very much.
Councilperson Watson, question for staff, I guess.
God, and I hate to even bring this up. LOSC versus D. Is there truly, if you did the math, there's truly going to be a difference if we were willing to accept D in the planned action area? How much would it drop these TIFs for planned action?
I don't know the specifics on how much it dropped the TIFs, but if the total dollar amount is in the EIS and the planned action EIS was identified the difference between the cost of LOSC versus LOSD, and it would change the TIFs by more than $100 or $200 per trip.
Okay, so not like by 20% or something.
No.
Okay, anyone else from the audience that wanted to come forward? Okay, so jump forward. Okay, Council, you're back to your chairs are getting hot now.
Yeah, if I might suggest that we kind of work on the list maybe, and again, this is not binding. It's just to give some direction so we can bring back at the next meeting an ordinance that hopefully the majority of you can support. So we kind of start, this is the easiest way to do it. Who's in favor of two zones? Okay, so we're pretty much, that's pretty much... who's in favor of the CPI, just to make the easy ones, the automatic CPI over time? Okay, so that's an easy one. Who would like to see a rebate for large sales tax generators?
This is an option.
Now that would be a separate ordinance.
Yeah.
Which is advantageous.
I'd like to see a lot more detail.
Okay. Okay. Good.
There's no formula you propose, so in concept, look at it.
I can't just raise my hand on that until I see.
Right. Fair enough.
Greg, the reason is I've seen that done in another city.
Yeah.
With disastrous results.
Yeah. I guess the biggie here is the staff recommendation. At least one of the staff recommendations was 3977 within the plan action area and 2486 outside. That's what's actually contained in my report. I guess to start it off, who would be willing to look at that type of range in the ordinance?
The staff recommended one.
Okay, so we have. So if anything, we'll start there. Those numbers will actually be in it. And then based on your public hearing next time and your discussion, we can always adjust it, you know, during the meeting so it doesn't lock you in.
Now, the other thing on the board, if there are TIF dollars and WashDOT dollars, I tend to go along with the idea that we don't tell WashDOT to put it inside. But I like the idea of putting...
And perhaps Larry can help with this. I guess it's important to make sure I'm not going sideways here. Let's say we have two zones with a planned action component and a non-planned action component. I don't think when development comes in, we're going to say, okay, we have $500,000. Well, we're going to put $350,000 over here. We're going to take $150,000 and put it over here. It all goes into one big pot to be spent on both the 70 and the 39. And it'll be up to you to decide where those priorities are. True or not true?
At the high level, true, but I think you still want to
fulfill the intent of
if you're charging in the planned action area for Main Street improvements or even for development within the planned action area, and you take all that money and you put it up to Thornton, you're likely going to get some pushback from the developers who are putting the money in, saying, hey, I'm seeing no improvements in front of my building, what's going on, or even in the area. It's got to reasonably, the impact fees that people pay have to reasonably benefit them. We understand that Thornton will provide some benefit to travel on Main Street. That's why it's in the plan in here. So you can do that process in here. Likewise, you don't want to take all the money for somebody up in the residential area, North Ferndale, and put it in to primarily benefit people on Main Street, even though those same people use the Main Street corridor. As you go through your six-year TIP and things, and it'll be Mark's job of trying to balance these out of getting projects done. That's the nice part about an impact fee is that you don't have to have 5% of this one and 10% of this one and 2% of that one. You can have 50% of something. Right. And so that's going to be your balancing act year to year of making those commitments in here. So you're to some degree following where the developments that's paying for those fees is getting the benefit out of them at the same time getting projects done. For the DOT part, as identified in the EIS, right now the impact fees that Mr. Young and Yuri have been talking about, they include essentially the additional improvements identified in the planned action EIS, including the DOT improvements, the roundabouts, the north interchange, at the Main Street interchange, and the Slater interchange in there, plus other sundry improvements that all go together because they serve the city as well. The calculations give the benefit to what's happening out in Whatcom County or Bellingham trips that use it or, you know, Blaine trips that come down and get off at Main Street and go over to Northwest or other corridors out here. So what the EIS had identified is maybe you want to start off and identify a portion that you can help provide the seed money to work with DOT to get the design plans done, get the studies done that they need, so you can start reaching out to get more state money or grant money through Transportation Improvement Board or the legislature, because now you have a project, but you don't want to, I don't think you want to completely stop that, the DOT money, in the sense that you need to get those more refined designs, costs, and right-of-way needs identified so you don't end up with a building right where you want to build the roundabout in the future. So you want to get planned ahead of that. And then as you get closer to understanding, hey, yeah, we actually have this, we have an agreement with DOT that we're going to split this 50-50 or 30-70 or whatever it may be, then you could adjust those and add those costs back in.
Absolutely.
Watson?
Just a quick question. Can we discuss the TIF numbers in our committee meetings just to talk a little bit about it? I don't know if I want. Maybe to make the actual council meeting shorter. If you had a better ordinance to us, perhaps we wouldn't have to make so many amendments on the fly.
True. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I think with staff, you have the direction you need to go. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on. Mayor reports tomorrow. I love seeing you all the time, so tomorrow we'll see you out the city tour. 9 o'clock at City Hall, we'll meet inside the committee room, and then the bus will show up with the handcuffs.
Gary, do you know what way you're, because I've got a million things I've got to get done tomorrow.
Yeah, you have a schedule that was done to go. We're going to start at Water Sewer Plant, then back to City Hall, then up to
Public Works.
I didn't get a schedule.
Yeah, we can email it out tomorrow.
I think I did email it.
Well, it won't help, will it?
Really quickly.
Yeah, we were going to do
9 o'clock at City Hall, okay, then directly over Water Sewer for an hour and a half, then back to City Hall.
We'll
be leaving City Hall right around 12, and we'll head up to Public Works, and then we'll walk over to the new police.
Okay.
We'll be done by 1:30.
Okay, I'll probably join you at Public Works.
No food provided, bring your own lunch. Okay, I'm going to steal some thunder from the Public Works Director because I'm just so proud of her, and too bad Katie's gone. That's fine. I want you people to recognize what a great person you are. All agreements are signed for Main Street. We're ready to proceed on construction.
All of them.
Well, we have
either
deeds or a possession use.
So everyone,
we have all the rights. All the rights.
Awesome.
Nice work for you.
So project's on schedule. That's it for Mayor reports. Council reports.
Got back from California last night. I'm really exhausted, so I'm happy to go home.
Okay, Councilperson Goodrich.
The little thing for the Economic Development Commission. At our March meeting, we're going to meet an hour earlier. I think it's still on, as far as I know. And we're going to be walking Main Street from City Hall to the river and back, looking at buildings, discussing some aspects of that, the city center core. And then we're going to end up back at City Hall and kind of talk about what we – or end up here. Yeah, that's right. We're going to start at City Hall and then – no, starting here.
March 1st.
Okay.
March 1st.
Is that the 2,000 right steps thing on March 1st?
That's 2,000. No. 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, what?
2 o'clock here.
2 o'clock right here.
And we're just going to walk Main Street area and then end up back here. So adding an extra hour to our EDC meeting. So it'll be from 2 to 4:30. First Thursday of the month.
Councilperson Watson.
Ferndale Public Market is looking for a market manager. If you know anybody who wants the job, they could send a resume to manager@ferndalepublicmarket.org. If you know anyone, it's a part-time job, 25 hours a week.
Great. Okay, any other council reports? Staff reports. Finance Director.
Briefly, I sent you an email today on sales tax performance. Sales tax remains strong from the fourth quarter last year through February this year, and including our little gas station out there, Grandview, revenue came in this month as predicted. So it was nice to see that.
City Administrator.
Nothing else?
Nope. I didn't ask, but good. Public Works? No. City Clerk.
Council members, I'm going to ask for direction from you to do something. Last year I asked you to codify the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee. As you'll recall, it was done by resolution previously. So last year we put it in the code. During that debate, it was decided that to remove the mayor's ability to vote and instead provide him with a tiebreaker. Because of that, we have such low participation in the LTAC that I'm not able to secure a quorum to have meetings. So I would ask that the council please give me back the mayor as a voting member so that I can have a quorum to have a meeting. Without that, we cannot give you another recommendation on the Arts Commission.
Or LTAC.
The LTAC, recommendation on the Arts Commission's grant. So I need more voting members so I can have an official meeting and make a recommendation to you.
Do you need an official resolution? Are you going
to? I need direction from you so that the next meeting I can bring back an amending ordinance to that.
Well, who's the who's a, makes up the LTAC committee?
The LTAC committee makes is two members from organizations that receive grant revenue, two organizations that provide the revenue, so hotels and motels that collect the hotel motel tax, and two elected officials. The current liaison is Councilmember Zimmerman, and Mayor Jensen is also a liaison, although he now no longer has a vote.
Well, give me back this vote.
What I'm hoping for direction from you.
You can always pull me out of my office. Yeah. Make the meeting. At least make a quorum.
I think okay. You have a unanimous consent that we're happy with.
Once, twice a year, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Please. Any report? Okay. Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're adjourned.
Were you in favor of the CPI?
Just a little bit. I got a leak in my building.